what is this? Some kind of a game. All the germs you sold to Saddam Hussein. But that was when he was our friend, and you're gonna bring them home to us. In the end. And what is this? Some kind of a sport. You told us he was worthy of support. You build him up, you knock him down, you turn our heads around. And around. And what is this? Some kind of a joke. Has anybody noticed that we're broke?
Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Panama, Apollo, Bangor.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
OSHA has been ordered by a federal judge to release the names of companies with the worst safety records. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration had denied a Freedom of Information Act request filed in 2002 by the New York Times. OSHA had identified 13,000 companies as having injury and illness rates greater than the national average. The decision came down last week, and OSHA has 60 days to appeal.
Drug maker Bristol-Myers Squibb agreed this week to pay $150 million to shareholders for overstating its revenue by $2.5 billion from 1999 through 2001. The Securities and Exchange Commission levied one of the largest penalties ever against Bristol-Myers Squibb for accounting fraud involving wholesalers. The drug maker refused to acknowledge any wrongdoing, but did agree to take on an independent accounting investigator to monitor future financial reporting activities.
First, it was United Airlines, then U.S. Airways. Now Delta has joined the pension battle. The Airline Pilots Association has rejected a call for $1 billion in wage cuts at Delta. The pilots had offered wage, benefit, and job cuts amounting to between $655 and $705 million. Delta responded by asking for additional changes to the pension plan, eliminating night differentials, and a pay cut of 35%. The airline is now considering Chapter 11 restructuring.
More than 1,500 people rallied outside Las Vegas Aladdin Casino on Wednesday, demanding that the new owners recognize Employees Culinary Workers Union. Planet Hollywood is set to take over control of the casino in less than a month and is insisting on an election rather than a card check neutrality agreement. The union says the majority of workers have signed cards in support of forming a union, but management wants an election, which would give them ample time to launch an anti-union campaign. The Aladdin Hotel is one of only three casinos on the Vegas Strip that doesn't have a union.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A limited survey of 1,600 employers across the nation conducted by a human resources consulting firm suggests paychecks won't be getting much larger in the near future. Mercer Human Resources survey predicts an average pay increase of 3.3% for the U.S. workforce this year and a 3.5% average next year. This outpaces the rate of inflation, but not by much. Healthcare costs may be eating into wage hike budgets, especially when employer premiums are forecast to rise by double-digit percentages next year.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
The official line of the powers that be is that corporations simply do what their customers want. It's nothing but supply and demand in action, they tell us. The glorious free market in excelsis Deo. Nice theory, but reality is another story. For example, thanks to insider tapes from Enron that George Bush's Justice Department was recently forced to release, we can hear the free market thoughts of one Enron trader talking to another about all the money they stole from those poor grandmothers in California by manipulating the energy market in 2001. Yeah, Grandma Millie, man, but she's the one who couldn't figure out how to blankety-blank vote on the butterfly ballot. Yeah, now she wants her blankety-blank money back for all the power you've charged right up, jammed right up her blankety-blank for blankety-blank $250 a megawatt hour. Enron executives use market manipulation techniques that they colorfully dubbed Sidewinder, Russian Roulette, Ping Pong, and Donkey Punch. Charming, huh? Other Enroners brag on the tapes about cheating still more poor grandmothers, about shutting down an Enron-controlled power plant to drive up electricity prices, about how awesome it will be if Enron's honcho, Kenny Boy Lay, is chosen by his pal Bush to be the new energy secretary. Alas for Kenny Boy, Enron was crashing, and he was too politically hot to get the energy job, but George still helped him out. For the first several months of his administration, he deliberately forestalled demands to impose price controls to stop Enron's gouging of West Coast consumers. In that time, the corporation essentially stole billions of dollars from its unsuspecting customers, and Kenny Boy himself was able to bail out with a $100 million golden parachute. This is Jim Hightower saying, corporations today don't operate in a free market. They operate in a greed market, aided and abetted by the political puppets they put in office.
Hi, this is Doug Dupuy for SelectQuote, and I just called
Cheryl Payne,
one of SelectQuote's licensed agents.
Hi, Mr. Dupuy.
Hi, Cheryl. Why buy term life insurance through SelectQuote instead of somebody else?
Well, Mr. Dupuy, about 2 out of 3 people have health or lifestyle issues. Could be high blood pressure, skydiving. Now, depending on what insurance company you choose, you could overpay hundreds of dollars a year.
Well, where does SelectQuote come in?
SelectQuote's a real matchmaker. We impartially shop the pick of America's top life insurers to match you with your best buy.
Got an example?
Sure. I just matched a 40 years old who takes cholesterol medication with a $500,000 policy for under $22 a month.
Quite a match, Cheryl. Why not let SelectQuote match you with your best buy? Just call 1-800-772-8300. That's 1-800-772-8300. Or log on to SelectQuote.com.
Examples: First Colony Preferred, Best Colony, 10-year term, policy form 1420 and 1421 et al. Underwritten by First Colony Life Insurance Company, a GE Financial Assurance Company, Lynchburg, Virginia. Policy subject to underwriting approval.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite around the planet on radiopower.org. It's Friday. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders, in 1991, became the first independent congressman elected in 40 years to the United States House of Representatives. He's since been reelected 5 times. He's the longest-serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives. Our number, if you'd like to be on the air with Congressman Sanders, 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to drop into the chat room and participate in the online conversation that goes on while we're on the air, just go to tomhartman.com and click the chat button right up there at the top. And Congressman Sanders, Bernie, hey, welcome.
Good to be with you, Tom.
You were in England last week.
I was in England.
Anything noteworthy out of
reasons, but also to attend an independent inquiry regarding Gulf War illness and the British military. It's an issue that I've been working on a long time, very interested in. We had 100,000 American veterans from the first Gulf War who were suffering from one or another symptom, which collectively is called Gulf War illness. We think we're getting some breakthroughs into understanding the cause of that And it touches on a lot of other things. So it's an issue that I've been involved in for many years.
Yeah. Are we starting to see soldiers from this Afghan and Iraq conflicts now coming back with Gulf War syndrome?
No, I think it's a different situation. We're seeing a lot of terrible injuries, obviously, from this one, a lot of amputations and so forth. Yeah. But the first Gulf War illness, in my view, is associated with the fact that it was a very, very toxic environment. There was the release inadvertently in the blowing up of a military depot in Qamasir in Iraq of low-level sarin. So the issue is, what kind of illnesses are developed through low-level exposure, not only to sarin, but to other types of toxins which were in that battlefield?
Yeah.
And what interests me is not only how we can help 100,000 American veterans, is the connection between that illness, Gulf War illness, and other civilian-type illnesses like chronic fatigue syndrome, multiple chemical sensitivity, fibromyalgia, and other illnesses that we see in civilian society that may also be related to low-level chemical exposure.
Yeah, well, and there's certainly enough of that. And here we've got 80,000 chemicals that are being manufactured in the United States. Fewer than 6,000 of them have ever even been researched for toxicity.
That is exactly the point.
And
there's some interesting research being done on Gulf War illness again, which may lead us in the direction of solving some of the illnesses caused by chemical exposure in civilian life.
Yeah, remarkable. Bernie, I got an email here. I've got to share it with you and our listeners. I know they're going to love it. And by the way, if you have a question or a comment for Congressman Sanders, or just want to comment on the issues of the day, 1-866-889-8894. This came from conservativealerts.com, which is one of these big right-wing websites that sends out their, you know, the talking points to the Hannitys of the world and whatnot, and to the, you know, average the GOP foot soldiers. Dear T. Hartman, are you willing to face the consequences of a liberal sweep this November? John Kerry as president? John, I'll sue you, Edwards, as vice president? With liberals like Ted Kennedy, Tom Daschle, and Bernie Sanders setting the agenda in Congress? If that scares you as much as it scares me, then I hope you'll sign our Fight the Extreme Liberals petition by clicking through below. Bernie Sanders hates President Bush so much he's, quote, not only going to vote for John Kerry, I'm going to run around this country campaigning for him, end quote. Sanders holds a lot of clout with the extreme anti-war liberal crowd, and he's pledged to urge these liberals to vote for Kerry instead of a third-party candidate like Ralph Nader. If Bernie is successful in convincing Nader voters to instead vote for Kerry, that may be the difference in the next presidential election. Sanders voted against President Bush's prescription drug plan, but is for a single-payer Canadian-style plan that is even more radical than Hillary Clinton's failed takeover schemes. Plus, Bernie Sanders is a constant thorn in President Bush's side. Together, I know we can stop Sanders and Kerry. If Sanders isn't challenged, he will make good on his promise to, quote, run around the country, end quote, campaigning for John Kerry. And Sanders' reputation with the extreme anti-war crowd may be just the push Kerry needs to win this November. Please don't let that happen. Boy, you're really a firecracker.
You didn't know how powerful I was, huh?
That's amazing.
You didn't know that this election depended on what I do and don't do.
Apparently it does. I mean, this is, and, you know, of course, they want you to click on the link and send them money and send a letter to a letter to the editor and all this. And they got this guy's name, Greg Park, in here. You know, he's apparently going to be running against you or something. I don't, you know. I read this and I thought, hey, that's cool. This is kind of a badge of honor. You're going to run around the country. Did you see, by the way, this was in Broadcasting and Cable, which is an industry publication this morning, the president of News Corp, the president and CEO of News Corp, Peter Chernin, News Corp, of course, owns Fox News Channel and is owned by Rupert Murdoch, but the CEO of News Corp this morning endorsed John Kerry. And, you know, apparently yesterday afternoon he was on Your World with Neil Cavuto, which is, you know, one of the Fox News things.
Right.
And he said he wasn't anti-Bush, but he explained why he thought News Corp would benefit from a Kerry presidency. Here, quoting him, he says, I think the two things that will be most important in News Corp, one is education, and then he goes through this whole thing about how, you know, education is important. And then he says the other thing is a real global focus, and he goes through this whole rap about how I think the more this country looks outward and develops close relationships with economies and countries around the world, I think it creates bigger markets for our products and our ideas. This democracy is about making choices, and my choice is that I believe that Mr. Kerry can do a good job of moving our economy forward. Amazing, huh?
And it is, and my mind is trying to figure out why they do this.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if it has anything to do with the film Outfoxed.
Well, apparently this guy actually held a fundraiser for Kerry a few weeks ago. And then in the Los Angeles Times today, there's this story by Michael Finnegan where yesterday, apparently, John Kerry said that he's going to resist mergers in the news industry. He said, I quote this is hot off the presses, Bernie. Kerry vowed to name people to the Federal Communications Commission who are, quote, committed to enforcing equal employment and ensuring that small and minority-owned broadcasters are not consolidated into extinction, end quote. And they say,
well, Tom, as you know, that's a huge issue, and I know you've been talking about it on the station. I know many of your listeners are concerned about it. One of the most important issues facing this country,
yeah.
And that is whether we're going to continue to see the trend of fewer and fewer large corporations controlling the media and what we see, hear, and read, or we're going to create a kind of vibrant media where different points of view are heard, where we can have locally owned media to talk about local issues, and just get different points of view out there. So I'm glad that Kerry is talking about this issue. And it's something that, as Americans, we've got to demand.
Yeah, I was very pleased. I remember when John Dean on Crossfire. There you go. Thank you. John, so much for watching Comedy Central. Howard Dean came on and said that one of the first things he'd do is break up the big media combines, and that was the last day that he got any good press. And I was just surprised to see Kerry come out and say it, you know, before he's elected. I was impressed.
It's a very huge issue. People are. I'm very. And by the way, there've been some good films out there. Outfox deals with the role of Fox Television as a propaganda arm for the Republican Party. Orwell Rolls in His Grave is a movie done by a fellow named Robert Pappas. I thought very, very good as well, focusing on the fact that fewer and fewer large corporations control the flow of information in America and the significance of that.
Yeah.
So the word is getting out there, and I think one of the reasons, by the way, the Michael Moore's film has been so popular is people saying, hey, I want to hear another point of view, and I don't often hear that on television.
Yeah, I want to see the whole story. You're in both those movies, too, by the way.
Well, what can I tell you, Tom? Yeah, it's true.
I thought it was great. I was watching Outfox the other day, and there's Bernie. It's like, this is super. Okay, let's go to the telephone lines. 1-866, one of these newfangled toll-free numbers, 1-866-889-8894. Curtis in Little Rock, Arkansas is on the line. Curtis, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you, Curtis?
All right, fine. You know, when I listen to the emails like what y'all just read, man, you got to be real careful. You watch yourself, because that sounds like a terrorist threat to me. You know what I'm saying? Because it's written to say, watch out, we got to stop him, you know? That sounds like something a terrorist would write and then let the other end do what they got to do. You know what I'm saying?
Well, thanks for the warning. Get these things quite often.
To me, that sounded like a threat. It says we got to stop him no matter what, you know. You know, read it to yourself and let somebody else, you know, and step back and look at it from our perspective, you know. To me, that sounds like Bush's way of, that's why everybody thinks it's a conspiracy between all of them. They sound like they learned real good from Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
You know, sounds like they.
Well, I take it as a little bit of a compliment. If they're that nervous of me, I must be doing something now and then that's right. So.
Absolutely, and we'll be watching your back too.
There you go.
Thanks a lot, Curtis.
Thanks,
you
Curtis. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Bernie, the employment figures came out this morning at 8:30 from the U.S. Department of Labor. 32,000 workers jobs were created last month. The Bush administration had predicted 228,000. We need 125,000 to keep up with population growth. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, there are some economists who are saying that this is the beginning of a slowdown in the economy. And I think it's clearly not good for Bush's reelection effort. It's obviously not good for the working people of America. I think this economy is very, very fragile, much more so than most people think it is. And the important point is not just the employment numbers. Equally important are the kind of jobs that are being created. Are the new jobs being created primarily jobs that allow people to live a middle-class lifestyle? Are they paying people good wages with decent pay, with decent benefits, or are they jobs which are primarily low-wage jobs, minimal benefits, Walmart-type jobs? And unfortunately, the answer is the latter. There are some decent-paying jobs being created, and that is true. But most of the new jobs that are being created are at the low end of the wage structure, And the projections into the future, frighteningly, are that is the way our economy is going. 7 out of the 10 fastest growing jobs in the next 10 years, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the United States government, will require a high school degree, on-the-job training, and will be low-wage, low-benefit jobs. That's not a good sign for our kids and our grandchildren.
Yeah, that's a tragedy. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Jerry in North Carolina is on the line. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Good afternoon, you two.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
I've got a question in that I have read several from a few limited sources, the main one being Capitol Hill Blue, which I understand is sort of a libertarian website. And it was in regards to the medication that that Bush is on. And I know that's not probably not something that Bernie would want to comment on, but I would like to hear what Tom has to say about that. There was a long story about how his psychological disposition has changed over the last 6 months.
Yeah.
And it sort of ended with him storming off the stage when he was asked about Ken Lay.
Yeah,
and
was it?
Some cursing behind the, not out of earshot, but out of camera view.
Yeah.
And
I saw that article in Capitol Hill Blue. In fact, we commented on it on the air. Jerry, we'll ask Bernie if he knows anything about it, and I'll give you some feedback right after this. Stick around, and thanks for the call. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, the Tom Hartman Program, Brunch with Bernie.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry. There's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD, and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guaranty Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the Project for the New American Century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman, available in bookstores everywhere.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you with Congressman Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie segment, the first hour of our Friday afternoon program today, the 6th of August, 2004, 88 days to regime change. And, Bernie, I know you're not much one for Washington, D.C. gossip. Have you heard anything about it?
No, I honestly have not.
Yeah, okay. This story going around about George W. being on meds. I'm frankly skeptical of it, but who knows?
I think it's important that we don't get diverted to that type of stuff. The issues in this campaign are as clear as night and day. The middle class is shrinking. Healthcare system is disintegrating. Bush is the worst environmental record of any president in modern history. We're involved in a war that we should not have been in. Over 900 Americans are dead. The gap between the rich and the poor is growing wider. We are treated, with contempt now all over the world by our former allies. We don't need to worry about Bush's medications.
Yeah.
What we do need to do is just go out and talk to our neighbors and just try everything that we can to get rid of this guy in November.
Yeah, on November 2nd. At the polls. 1-866.
At the polls.
Yeah, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Christine in Owego, Michigan, is on the line. Hey, Christine, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks.
Hi.
I got to tell you, Christine, it's great to hear from Owego. My grandparents both lived there. I spent a lot of summers there.
Actually, we share grandparents. My father is your first cousin.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
your cousin, Don.
Well, that's great. Yeah, so you're Donnie's daughter. Okay, well, let's not.
Maryland's granddaughter.
Yeah, well,
that's a big family. All right, Christine.
Yeah, so what's up, Christine?
I have a comment about, I guess a lot of us, my people my age, I'm 21, are confused about why we're in Iraq and all of that. It started out as the big 9/11 thing, and then after that, a lot of my best friends got shipped off, and they had nothing to do except they sat over there half the time.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to know why our people are being sent over there when they're not really doing a whole lot of anything.
Okay, good question. Bernie, here you're talking to United States Congressman. Bernie, we've seen this arc of reasons. What's the current rationale?
Well, I tell you what, Christine, my own view is that there's a couple of reasons. Obviously, on 9/11, this country was attacked.
Right.
And the perpetrators of that attack, as you know, were Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden. And they're still out there, and they're still a very, very dangerous force. I think from the very beginning of Bush's presidency, he has wanted to get rid of Saddam Hussein for a number of reasons. Saddam Hussein, in fact, is a very terrible guy, but a guy who had nothing to do with 9/11. So I think that there was a little bit of a switch here, and in order to maybe deflect attention away from Osama bin Laden, who has not been captured, Bush went to war against Iraq on a lot of false pretenses, trying to suggest that there was a link, but in fact that is not the case.
Yeah, and all of this was done just before the 2002 elections and worked tremendously to the advantage of Republicans around the country who were hyping the war stuff.
Right.
And,
Yeah. So, Christine, I think the bottom line is that people were shocked and angered by 9/11, and Bush used that shock and anger and diverted that attention and that frustration to Iraq.
Because we all feel like we were misled by why we're over there. Yeah. When it
I
became,
think that that's true.
You know,
and
that
I think
Osama
you have a good reason to feel that way. But, you know, Christine,
kind of
I hope that you and your friends get as active as you can in the political process.
Right.
Because it is people your age, by the way, who are over in Iraq, who are getting killed, who are getting wounded, who may be subject, who may
like
be subject to a draft.
I saw my best friend last night for the first time in 2 years because he's been in Iraq.
Yeah.
And it's just been awful for him. So
it's got to be.
A lot of us have a lot of questions, including him himself, why he was even over there.
Okay, well, thanks for calling, Christine, and get involved.
Yeah, thank you, Christine.
Thanks.
29 minutes past the hour, 29 and a half past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 1-866-889-8894. Brunch with Congressman Bernie Sanders. We'll be right back. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
OSHA has been ordered by a federal judge to release the names of companies with the worst safety records. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration had denied a Freedom of Information Act request filed in 2002 by the New York Times. OSHA had identified 13,000 companies as having injury and illness rates greater than the national average. The decision came down last week, and OSHA has 60 days to appeal.
Drug maker Bristol-Myers Squibb agreed this week to pay $150 million to shareholders for overstating its revenue by $2.5 billion from 1999 through 2001. The Securities and Exchange Commission levied one of the largest penalties ever against Bristol-Myers Squibb for accounting fraud involving wholesalers. The drug maker refused to acknowledge any wrongdoing, but did agree to take on an independent accounting investigator to monitor future financial reporting activities.
First, it was United Airlines, then U.S. Airways. Now Delta has joined the pension battle. The Airline Pilots Association has rejected a call for $1 billion in wage cuts at Delta. The pilots had offered wage, benefit, and job cuts amounting to between $655 and $705 million. Delta responded by asking for additional changes to the pension plan, eliminating night differentials, and a pay cut of 35%. The airline is now considering Chapter 11 restructuring.
More than 1,500 people rallied outside Las Vegas Aladdin Casino on Wednesday, demanding that the new owners recognize employees' culinary workers' union. Planet Hollywood is set to take over control of the casino in less than a month and is insisting on an election rather than a card check neutrality agreement. The union says a majority of workers have signed cards in support of forming a union, but management wants an election, which would give them ample time to launch an anti-union campaign. The Aladdin Hotel is one of only three casinos on the Vegas Strip that doesn't have a union.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A limited survey of 1,600 employers across the nation conducted by a human resources consulting firm suggests paychecks won't be getting much larger in the near future. Mercer Human Resources survey predicts an average pay increase of 3.3% for the U.S. workforce this year and a 3.5% average next year. This outpaces the rate of inflation, but not by much. Healthcare costs may be eating into wage hike budgets, especially when employer premiums are forecast to rise by double-digit percentages next year.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, taking care of business here. The Tom Hartman radio program with Congressman Bernie Sanders on this Friday afternoon, the 6th of August. Our Brunch with Bernie segment, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to be on the air with Congressman Sanders. Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
Well, hello, gentlemen. I agree with the Congressman. We don't need divisive attack politics. All you have to do is pay attention to what's going on. It's August of an election year, and apparently the Bush administration is making an attack on the 1938 Fair Labor Standards Act. I don't know how this is going to help them. I'm sure you've seen the story. In Ohio, Bush, in concert with the White House, passing out two-page memoranda on changing labor laws so workers can choose time off instead of overtime pay. And, of course, the AFL-CIO is up in arms about this. How does this help them? Why would they do something like this, or is this just another payback?
Well, I think that a lot of that has to do with their what they think the American people are pretty dumb. So what they're saying is, look, we're into family values, and we know how much time you want to spend with your kids, so we're going to give you an option. You're not going to have to work overtime. You can take, you know, time off here and comp time there and so forth. The reality is, this is the reality. The reality is you walk in for a job, and your employer will say, listen, we don't really want to pay overtime. You're going to be prepared to take comp time, aren't you?
Yeah.
And the guy was, oh, yes, I guess I will. This is a continuous attack on overtime. As you know, the Bush administration is changing various labor regulations that could eliminate overtime pay, time and a half, for some 6 million American workers. But I think you're right. I think as the American people understand the issue, it certainly doesn't work in Bush's favor, and it just is part of a continued attack upon the middle class and working families of this country.
Yeah, a war that was first declared by Ronald Reagan in a big way with his...
And let's be clear, they're winning it. The
yeah.
rich are getting much richer. The middle class is shrinking. Poverty is growing. Workers are working longer and longer hours. And it's time that we turn that around. I mean, there's class warfare going on in America, and the wrong guys are winning it. And the middle class had better wake up, or there's not going to be much left of the middle class.
Yeah, as Warren Buffett says, his class is winning. When Reagan came into office, 25% of the American workforce was unionized, and now it's down to, what, 8%, I think? It's
I think 8 or 9% in the private sector, higher in the public sector.
Yeah. 1-866-889-8894. Khalif in California. Where in California are you, Khalif?
Oh, I'm in Vallejo.
Great. Don't listen to your radio. There's a slight delay there.
Yeah, I'm cutting it down right now.
Yeah, there you go. Just listen to the phone. So, what's up? You're live.
I was trying to understand, you know, like, the Republicans and the conservatives, their views have always been to blame a lot of the country's woes, if we have woes, on, like, minorities or foreign countries or stuff like that. And I was trying to understand, why is it that Democrats or liberals, we don't see that, or we didn't see that ahead of time when the finger was pointed at Iraq and other things, opposed to going after Afghanistan like we were supposed to. I'm trying to really, like, as soon as they said it was weapons of mass destruction, I doubted it. And I'm wondering why most people just didn't doubt it in the first place.
Well, Khalif, you're raising a very important point, and what you're talking about is called wedge politics. Instead of being honest and saying, look, let's get to the root cause of our problem, why is the middle class shrinking? Why is our health care system disintegrating? Why is it that we have so many environmental problems and so forth and so on, and have an honest discussion as to how we can solve these difficult issues? What the Republicans do, it's just as you said, what they play off is one group against the other group. What they say to people who are straight, who are heterosexual, hey, you know what the problems of this country are? It's gay marriage. That's the problem. What they say to white workers are, it's not that your jobs are going to China because corporations want to get cheaper labor. It's affirmative action. What they say to rural people is, hey, the government wants to take away your hunting rifles. Those urban folks want to do that. They play off women against men, black against white, native-born against immigrant, and they divide the American people up, and that's how they hope to win elections. And it is an issue that we have got to really focus on. Our job is to bring people together around common interest. Should everybody in America have health care as a right of citizenship? What do you think, Khalif?
But why don't we see it ahead of time? Why did so many people allow it? I mean, to just go on and...
How do they get away with this stuff?
Yeah, well, let me make a couple of points. In terms of the war in Iraq, Tom, and this is not widely known. I'm an independent, not a Democrat. But in fairness to the Democrats, about 60% of the Democrats in the House voted against giving the president the authority to go to war. Mm-hmm. The media did a terrible job of reporting that. But that is the reality. So most Democrats in the House of Representatives said, no, Mr. President, we're not giving you the authority. And many of them had suspicions about the so-called weapons of mass destruction and the link between, so-called link between Al-Qaeda and Iraq. But on the other hand, this wedge politics of playing one group off against the other is something the Republicans are spending huge amounts of money on. And it is something that we have got to figure out how to effectively fight.
Well said. Thank you, Khalif, for the call. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Alfred in Wyoming, Michigan, is on the line. Alfred, welcome to the program.
Yes, Tom and Congressman, I wanted to bring to your attention today, and the large automobile companies are meeting in Traverse City to talk over their problems, and it was in the Detroit Free Press today in the business section. And it says... some say times are right for a national health system, and John Devine, a GM, a chief financial officer, said nothing is more important to us, and they're moving beginning to discuss and agree on a health care, which, of course, is leaving Bush way to the right, and Kerry doesn't have to move to the center because the people who run the show in this country are beginning to see that in order to be competitive in the world market in the automobile and other businesses, that we're going to have some sort of a national health system. And I wanted to bring that to your attention, that there are a couple of articles in the Detroit Free Press in the business section today.
Okay, I will check that out. Alfred, thank you for bringing that to our attention. That's a very, very important issue. Mm-hmm. Because when we talk about the need for national health care, what we are saying is not only is it right and moral and important for our country that every man, woman, and child have health care as a right of citizenship, as you've just indicated, and apparently some of these CEOs in Detroit are catching on to, it is a huge economic issue.
It's also good business.
They pointed out, too, that only 1% of the health cases in the United States amount to 20% of the health care. So they've been making some big studies on this, and they're getting reports up there. And they're sort of having a love feast also with the UAW. They gave some sort of a Camel Award of some sort. First time it went to somebody who wasn't in the Capitol, was a labor person.
Hmm.
But the important point economically, it's hard to compete when you're spending so much on health care and prescription drugs against other countries, if you like, who have national health care programs.
They came out with a figure of $1,400 per car, and the steel is costing them $600 or $700.
So they're spending more, double on health care as to what they're spending on steel.
Steel, right, yeah. Per car.
And that's a little bit crazy.
So I thought I wanted to bring your attention because it certainly is an important movement. It's going to leave Bush hanging out there with a fish line with no fish on it.
There you go.
That's right.
Thank you, Alfred.
That is exactly right. So if you have big business and working people saying that the health care system is falling apart and Bush is there saying, hey, this is a wonderful system, he's going to look pretty dumb.
Yeah, and it's fascinating. It's good business. It's just good business. And
that's right.
And business people in America are saying, hey, why didn't we think of this earlier?
And the point to be made, it's not only a question that having it employer-based is a disaster, whether you're General Motors or whether you're a small mom-and-pop store who cannot afford health care anymore for your employees. It's also the system in its entirety is grossly inefficient. Let us never forget that with 44 million Americans having no health insurance, we spend twice as much per person on health care as any other country. It's a wasteful, bureaucratic, inefficient system that needs a fundamental overhaul.
Amen. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Larry in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Larry, what's up?
Hi, gentlemen. Good afternoon. First of all, Tom, I just read your book, Last Days of Ancient Sunshine. I thought it was excellent.
Thank you.
I've got one question for Bernie and a follow-up for you. First, Bernie, I just got a letter back from the Republican representative of my state, and it seems like anytime somebody tries to do something to clean up the environment. I hear from the Republicans, well, we can't do it. I don't sense any vision. And it was specifically about the Lieberman and McCain idea of climate stewardship. Do you see any potential eventually to get some of this stuff passed?
Not under the Bush administration. You know, the League of Conservation Voters, I believe it was, has given Bush an F rating. He appointed this fella, you may know, Mike Leavitt, as the administrator for EPA. And this was the former governor of Utah, who was regarded as the man who had the worst environmental record of any of the 50 governors. So Bush is clearly in cahoots with a lot of the polluters and the big businesses who believe that government should deregulate many aspects of what we're currently doing. So I don't have any hope in terms of the environment and this administration.
Well, a follow-up question for either one of you. National Geographic and some other publications have been beginning to talk about the whole peak oil idea, that the resources are eventually going to dwindle down and potentially cause a real problem in a lot of areas of our life. Is there anybody out there that's actually willing to deal with that, or do they just not see that that's going to be a problem?
Oh, no, there are many people out there who understand that not only that we should, but we now really can. Talking about moving to sustainable energy is no longer a utopian vision. You know, for 100 years from now, we can do it. We can break our dependency on fossil fuel. We can be much more, we can do much, much, much better in terms of energy conservation. The fact that we're still driving cars that get 15, 18 miles per gallon is beyond belief. The fact that we haven't exploited in any way the potential of solar, of wind. We're making some progress with wind, but if you compare the amount of money that goes in corporate welfare for fossil fuels, for nuclear power, as opposed to sustainable energy, it's just the gap is huge. So, yes, Larry, there are many of us who understand that we got to break our dependence on fossil fuel for a dozen different reasons and move to sustainable energy.
Yeah, well said. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, Rick in Grand Rapids. A lot of listeners from WTKG calling in today, I imagine. Hey, Rick.
How are you, Tom, and are you Bernie?
Good.
Senator Kerry was in town on Monday here in Grand Rapids and drew a big crowd. And Bernie, I have to say you're my favorite member of Congress. I know you stick up for the working people, and you're very much concerned about how the military budget is sometimes inflated. But I wondered if you two fellows had discussed or at least saw in the news last night this new anti-Kerry ad. And also, when Bush was signing the defense bill, he must have had a Freudian slip. He was saying something about our enemies are out to hurt and destroy our country, and so are we. I think he said something honestly there, but by mistake. But it was kind of amazing to me that they covered the anti-Kerry ad, and even Dick Morris and Bill O'Reilly said it was a very unfair ad. But I didn't see too much coverage on the Bush verbal faux pas.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me just, I don't know about his faux pas, but I do know about this ad, which is suggesting that Kerry really was not wounded and he's exaggerated his feats in Vietnam and so forth. I think, and it was to John McCain's credit, once again, you know, McCain is unfortunately supporting Bush. He's a good Republican and all of that stuff. But to his credit, he got out there and said, this is absurd. This is negative campaigning at its worst. And he disavowed that ad and asked the Bush people to do that as well. What you're going to see in this campaign, if it's consistent with the way that Karl Rove has run campaigns in the past, is on one level you're going to see a strong whispering campaign, extremely negative attacks, and then you're going to see the Bush people disassociating themselves or separating themselves from it, but really encouraging these types of attacks. My own guess in this particular instance is that it will probably backfire on them.
Yeah, and
but you can expect to see attacks on Mrs. Kerry, all kinds of gutter attacks. That's what they did, by the way, against Senator McCain in South Carolina when McCain was challenging Bush for the Republican nomination. And that's what Rove and his friends have done for many, many years. They're heavily into dirty politics. And there's no reason to expect that that won't continue.
Yeah, but with John McCain in South Carolina, they did it just at the last minute. He had no chance to respond. And this, like you say, this may well backfire. One of the guys who's in the ad in this morning's newspaper has already come out and said, you know, they sent me that thing. I signed it and faxed it back. I shouldn't have done it. I don't feel that way. You know, I never knew John Kerry. You know, it's just amazing. Already, these guys are starting to.
What there will even be, I mean, then they're going to go, you know, underground on these things. They'll be whispering campaigns
sure.
via telephone, via email.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the Bush people will say, oh, this is terrible. You know, we have nothing to do with it. But that stuff will get out.
Yeah, they got this book out. Drudge has been flogging it. It's number one on Amazon now. Here's Bush's quote from yesterday afternoon, Bernie, just because you haven't heard it. You've got
our enemies are innovative and resourceful. And so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people. And neither do we.
I don't know if you could hear that. Yeah, so he puts his foot in his mouth. I'm not willing to indict him for that. I do the same thing, but from time to time. So anyhow, John and Louis, John in Louisiana is on the line. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, how you doing today?
Great. We've only got about 30 seconds here left in this segment.
Well, look, all I got to say is this. I mean, I've been listening to a lot of the things, but, you know, I'm not very good speaking or anything, but this is the deal. Why don't they put a group of senators from the right and from the left on national TV and let a group of people debate them over the air where everybody can hear that, you know, what's going on, and have the proof right there when the accusations come out, have the proof to back it up right there on the spot.
There you go. That's a great
suggestion.
John
is right that we need to have those types of debates before the American people, and the media has got to allow those debates to take place.
Amen. Well said. Thank you, Bernie. Thank you, John. 1-866-889-8894. We've got to take a short break here. We'll be right back with Congressman Bernie Sanders, 10 minutes before the hour.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war. And Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers,
Call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Do you remember the smell of burning leaves?
I remember when the Environmental Protection Agency protected our environment.
Well, remember when one 40-hour week job was enough to support a family?
Yes, when the Department of Labor labored, well, for the laborers.
Remember when the news programs gave us the news instead of promos?
Was that when the Federal Communications Commission protected communications from monopolies?
Yeah. Oh, remember when big oil didn't control the White House?
When the Department of Energy concentrated on energy.
Not just oil.
Right. I even remember when there weren't 45 million Americans without health insurance.
Me too. Mm-hmm. And when a Medicare bill for seniors meant help for seniors, not for big drug companies and HMOs.
Uh-huh. When welfare was primarily a safety net for the poor, not profit for the big corporations.
That was back when the Internal Revenue Service served the revenue stream by taxing the rich their fair share.
And when Social Security was secure?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when the so-called intelligence agencies were free to report their findings without fear of offending the White House?
You mean back when our intelligence was intelligent?
Yeah. It seems we are imperfect people, which is why we need controls over the too powerful and the too rich. Isn't that the way it used to be?
Yes, when corporations only ran corporations, not the government.
Back when federal regulators actually regulated.
When the press pressed for the truth.
When the foxes weren't in charge of the hen house.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember those times? Then you remember democracy. We can go there again, but you have to vote.
Yes, vote. Before the electronic voting machines make it impossible to assure that your vote is counted. And in the process, make democracy just a fading.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 4 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you with Congressman Bernie Sanders, a Brunch with Bernie segment. Every Friday afternoon, we've got Bernie. We've got two callers in about 3 minutes, so let's try to
do
these quickly. Here, Thomas in Traverse City, Michigan. Whoops, wrong button there. Thomas in Traverse City, Michigan's on the line. Hey, Thomas, what's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Great. What's your question? Listen to the phone, not the radio.
I'm listening to the phone right now.
Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead, Thomas.
We actually want to kind of give a shout-out to our band.
Your band?
Yeah, we actually have a rock band. We were just kind of wanting people to hear about it beforehand before we got out there.
Okay. I'm sorry, Thomas. We don't do PSAs here. Let's see. Dave in Humboldt County's on the line. Hey, in California. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Well, gentlemen, I persistently attempt to address the reality that people don't want to hear, but you two wonderful people are realists. You're very well grounded, and I'm convinced, Bernie, if you ever see this reality, you will be the one who will confront it. Yesterday, I had occasion to be speaking with Professor David Ray Griffin, and I'm here to tell you that that man is not a conspiracy theorist. That man has very objectively and rationally laid out overwhelming evidence. It's evidence that if you read it and you confront it, you'll say, I'll be damned, and you're the man who will expose it to the rest of the Congress. I did confront and got a commitment from one of your colleagues, Senator Jack Reed, to read the new Pearl Harbor and then say whether or not you think it's a conspiracy theory. Read it. Read it, Bernie.
Okay. Thank you, Dave.
Okay. Thank you, Dave, for the call and the comments. Bernie, just in the minute or so we've got to wrap up, any final thoughts about what's happening in Congress or what we can do to take back a democracy here in America?
Well, I think the key thing for the American people right now is to understand that this election is probably the most important election in my lifetime, for sure, and in the modern history of the United States. And it really has to do whether we are going to be a government which represents kind of all of the people and try to do our best for all of the people, whether we are going to move to social Darwinism, which essentially says that if you are rich and powerful, you can do anything you want and get anything you want, and if you're middle class and poor, hey, good luck to you. You're out there on your own. So I would hope that in the, you know, less than 3 months left into this election, that people do what they have not done before, and that is reach out to other people. Just don't talk to your friends. Get people to vote. Get young people to understand the significance of the political process on their lives. Get people to go above the wedge issues which are out there to divide us, and to focus on how we're going to create an economy with good jobs for everybody, health care for all people, where we're going to protect civil liberties while we fight terrorism, and so forth and so on. So I would hope that the listeners today would really deeply get involved in the political process, because if we lose this election, we're going to be very angry at ourselves that we didn't work harder. And you know what? History is not going to forgive us.
Thank you, Bernie.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
OSHA has been ordered by a federal judge to release the names of companies with the worst safety records. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration had denied a Freedom of Information Act request filed in 2002 by the New York Times. OSHA had identified 13,000 companies as having injury and illness rates greater than the national average. The decision came down last week, and OSHA has 60 days to appeal.
Drug maker Bristol-Myers Squibb agreed this week to pay $150 million to shareholders for overstating its revenue by $2.5 billion from 1999 through 2001. The Securities and Exchange Commission levied one of the largest penalties ever against Bristol-Myers Squibb for accounting fraud involving wholesalers. The drug maker refused to acknowledge any wrongdoing, but did agree to take on an independent accounting investigator to monitor future financial reporting activities.
First, it was United Airlines, then U.S. Airways. Now Delta has joined the pension battle. The Airline Pilots Association has rejected a call for $1 billion in wage cuts at Delta. The pilots had offered wage, benefit, and job cuts amounting to between $655 and $705 million. Delta responded by asking for additional changes to the pension plan, eliminating night differentials, and a pay cut of 35%. The airline is now considering Chapter 11 restructuring.
More than 1,500 people rallied outside Las Vegas Aladdin Casino on Wednesday, demanding that the new owners recognize Employees Culinary Workers Union. Planet Hollywood is set to take over control of the casino in less than a month and is insisting on an election rather than a card check neutrality agreement. The union says a majority of workers have signed cards in support of forming a union, but management wants an election, which would give them ample time to launch an anti-union campaign. The Aladdin Hotel is one of only three casinos on the Vegas Strip that doesn't have a union.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A limited survey of 1,600 employers across the nation conducted by a human resources consulting firm suggests paychecks won't be getting much larger in the near future. Mercer Human Resources survey predicts an average pay increase of 3.3% for the U.S. workforce this year and a 3.5% average next year. This outpaces the rate of inflation, but not by much. Healthcare costs may be eating into wage hike budgets, especially when employer premiums are forecast to rise by double-digit percentages next year.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
It's time for another edition of The Lifestyles of the Rich and Cranky. The Richie Rich Said is facing a terrible dilemma. The Summer Olympics are being held in Greece this year, and naturally, corporate CEOs want to be there and be part of the globe-hopping celebrity scene that swirls around such sporting galas. But gosh darn it, officials are warning that terrorists might make the Olympics a target. Of course, the government is providing a massive security force, including 40,000 police, 7,000 military troops, NATO jets, spy planes, and submarines. But the super wealthy swells of corporatedom are not about to accept the same security level that commoners get. So how can they feel extra special safe? Where there's money, there's always a way. And corporations are resolving their CEOs' Olympic security dilemma by buying luxurious protection packages for them. Top honchos of such outfits as American Express, Citigroup, and McDonald's will stay not in swank hotels, but in specially outfitted yachts to be anchored in the harbor near Athens. Thus, if there's a terrorist attack on the Olympic site, the yachts can flee with their elite passengers. Citigroup, for example, has leased a luxury ship that includes everything from armed guards to a yoga studio for its Olympic-bound executives. At $150,000, it's a pricey deal. That's $150,000 a day, and that doesn't even include fuel for the yacht or food and drink. Another corporate package provides a yacht and onboard security, plus helicopters, bodyguards, armor-plated limousines, and a motorcycle escort to get the special ones to and from the Olympic contests. Guess who gets to subsidize this high-life security cocoon for CEOs? You and me. The corporations will deduct the yacht packages from their income taxes, claiming them to be a necessary cost of doing business. This is Jim Hightower saying, these guys get the gold medal for Olympic-level excess.
Hi, this is Doug Dupuis for SelectQuote, and I just called
Cheryl Payne,
one of SelectQuote's licensed agents.
Hi, Mr. Dupuis.
Hi, Cheryl. Why buy term life insurance through SelectQuote instead of somebody else?
Well, Mr. Dupuis, about 2 out of 3 people have health or lifestyle issues. Could be high blood pressure, skydiving. Now, depending on what insurance company you choose, you could overpay hundreds of dollars a year.
Well, where does SelectQuote come in?
SelectQuote's a real matchmaker. We impartially shop the pick of America's top life insurers to match you with your best buy.
Got an example?
Sure. I just matched a 40 years old who takes cholesterol medication with a $500,000 policy for under $22 a month.
Quite a match, Cheryl. Why not let SelectQuote match you with your best buy? Just call 1-800-772-8300. That's 1-800-772-8300. Or log on to SelectQuote.com.
Examples: First Colony Preferred, Best Colony, 10-year term, Policy Form 1420 and 1421 et al. Underwritten by First Colony Life Insurance Company, a GE Financial Assurance Company, Lynchburg, Virginia. Policy subject to underwriting approval, available in most states.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 7.5 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. What does it cost to get into politics, to become president of the United States? What are the donors looking for in exchange for the revenues that they're getting. This is a serious issue. And Micah Sifry and Nancy Watzman have written a new book called "Is That a Politician in Your Pocket? A Washington on $2 million a Day." Nancy Watzman is with us. Nancy, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi.
Fundraising in the 2004 campaign, how is it different than it was in 2002, 2000, 1998, 1996? What's the trend here?
Well, you know, the trend is up. There's more money being collected. And what's happened in this election, because of the recently passed campaign finance reform, which eliminated soft money contributions to political parties, mm-hmm. more hard money is pouring into the candidates' coffers. And we're also seeing an explosion of spending on other things, like the Democratic convention that was just held the other week, and the Republican convention that's coming up, with corporations pouring money into parties and festivities around those events.
Yeah, and these the attack ads from MoveOn.org against Bush to the so-called Swift Vote Veterans for Truth against Kerry. This is all, you know, a manifestation. It's sort of like, you know, McCain-Feingold really didn't do anything. Are you familiar with the Boston versus Bilotti Supreme Court decision?
Sure.
Well, to what extent do you think that this is all the result of that?
Well, you know, the thing is, if we're looking at I mean, you said a moment ago that it almost seems like McCain and the McCain-Feingold bill doesn't work. It hasn't done much.
Yeah.
And the thing is it has done something. I mean, the soft money explosion to political parties was really obscene, and it was really, you know, really trading in on these unlimited contributions directly, you know, to candidates and curing favors. So it's done something.
But it's just been shuffled around, hasn't it? I mean, you know, now instead of the RNC running ads accusing John Kerry of being a bad guy, you've got some you know, the former Bush gubernatorial campaign manager down in Texas running the ads.
Well, the thing is that, well, this is partly why we argue for what we need is not just a system change that you know, plugs up a loophole here or a loophole there. We argue for clean money, clean elections campaign finance reform, which really just changes the whole dynamic of how candidates get elected.
Right.
This is the law already in Maine and Arizona, where candidates who collect a large number of small contributions from constituents, $5 contributions,
mm-hmm.
they are then eligible for public money to run their campaigns. And what this does is it really helps cut that tie with the special interest. You don't have to be connected to money in order to run and win.
Yeah. We're talking to Nancy Watzman, who is the author of Is That a Politician in Your Pocket? Washington on $2 million a Day. The website is publiccampaign.org/politician-in-your-pocket/. And Nancy, I have some familiarity with Maine and Arizona and their programs, and it's really quite astounding, the statistics, the number of people who are getting into politics who are not wealthy, who are not professional politicians in those two states. I think it's over 60% now in Maine of the candidates are you know, basically fully funded by public monies.
Right. And the thing is, the program's very popular once it's enacted with
right.
politicians, because they don't like to have to spend all their time raising money either.
That's right. And with the people, the problem, however, is that it seems, and maybe I'm just missing it, but it seems that in those two states there hasn't been a really knockdown, drag out high stakes battle that would bring in the big national money yet.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're talking state elections are obviously a different animal usually than federal elections, like what we're seeing in Bush versus Kerry. But
right.
it's still a great paradigm, because it enables you to run. We're not saying that we can, with clean money, eliminate all money from the system. That's going to be, you know, that's kind of an impossible goal. There's always going to be a way for money to flow in somehow, some way. What we do want to do is change the system to make it more democratic, more fair, to make it possible to run and win, like I said, without being connected with money.
Yeah,
and that's something that clean money can do.
I understand, and I absolutely agree. I absolutely agree with the goal, and in fact, I suspect we agree on the means to get there. I'm just concerned about the practicality of it. I mean, the reality is that Bush and Kerry are both getting $75 million or more in public money this year, which certainly is enough to run a national presidential campaign on. It's about what the campaigns were being run on just 12, 16 years ago, isn't it?
It is. I mean, you know, one might say that you might need a little more than that now, I suppose. But we do believe that the public financing system for the presidential election is, you know, most certainly broken. And it's because there are all these avenues for the other money to keep flowing in.
But isn't there always going to be a one-up as long as the Supreme Court's decisions, and Boston versus Bilotti being one of several, actually, but
right.
probably the most significant, that say that basically cash is equivalent to speech, and therefore political campaign contributions are protected by the First Amendment. As long as that stands, I mean, aren't we really at a crossroads point where the solution is to do what Franklin Roosevelt did in 1935 when the Supreme Court in 1912 or 1913 had struck down the minimum wage laws as unconstitutional, and so Roosevelt said, okay, I'm going to pack the court. And you know, he packed the court and he ran through minimum wage laws, and guys and, you know, people with his point of view said, okay, fine, and it's been that way ever since. And, you know, whoever's elected president next is going to appoint at least three Supreme Court justices. But isn't really the problem the fact that we've had these, because, I mean, if we were to say, okay, they're getting $75 million this year in public money each, let's make it $300 million in public money each, which is more than they've raised so far. Wouldn't then you still have, you know, these 527, 529 groups, whatever they call, coming in with another $100 million? I mean, isn't it just constantly going to be one-upping unless we say, you know, no, the Supreme Court was wrong. Cash is not equal to speech. Speech is what comes out of a human being's mouth. And
right. Well, I mean, you're raising a lot of interesting questions. I mean, certainly there are folks out there who are you know, certainly interested in getting the Supreme Court to revisit that decision, and ultimately, you know, that, as you say, I mean, it could be just a great thing to do. But I think, you know, we believe that, again, in the short term, there still are, you know, clean money kinds of reform can still, you know, be a really, really practical way to still enact significant change,
mm-hmm.
and do so remaining within the current interpretation of the Constitution. I mean, in terms of whether the 527 money, you know, will increase and so forth, no matter what. I mean, the thing is it's important to understand that. Well, first of all, again, there's not even, you know, even if we went back to the Constitution and were able to get a new interpretation, there's still going to be some way, somehow, some manner in which the money will flow. What we need to do, though, is to really separate it from the candidates so that, you know, it's not this quid pro quo, sorry about that, mm-hmm. that we normally see, where people give money and they really expect legislative favors in return, which is, you know, what we detail time after time in our book, Is That a Politician in Your Pocket?, just about how all these special interests get their way in Washington. And the 527 money, while it's a big problem, isn't still, you know, quite as directly connected as these direct contributions that go to the candidates.
Yeah. But Nancy Watzman, direct contributions now, when you talk about hard money, mm-hmm. are limited to $2,000 per person.
Yeah, but you know, there's more hard money coming in this election than there was hard money and soft money combined in the last election.
But isn't that in to a large extent the result of Howard Dean cracking the internet code, as it were? I mean,
you know,
aren't those the kind of contributions that we think would be healthy?
Well, you know, if you look at the money that's coming in to the Bush and Kerry campaigns, the great majority for both campaigns, more so for Bush than for Kerry, is still coming in $2,000 and above contributions. It's not coming in small contributions. And you have to keep in mind that it's just 0.25% of the entire population gives a contribution of $200 or more, and that's in the current elections. And so we're talking about a really tiny elite slice of the population. You know, there's been a lot of attention, a lot of news about the small donors in this election, and by all means, we think that's a healthy thing, a great thing, if small donors are getting more involved. But we have to, you know, you have to kind of take a reality check and look at the big picture, and there you'll see that it's still big contributions from the corporate execs that are really, the majority, the bulk of what's coming in.
Yeah. And certainly at the presidential level, it seems, frankly, even more toxic at the level of Congress and the United States Senate. Where you've got people who are just, I mean, Tom DeLay and particularly these so-called conservatives in the House of Representatives are just, I mean, to call them prostitutes is to insult prostitutes. It's I'm serious. I mean, it's they come out with these contorted rationales for doing the things they do that are. I mean, corporate welfare now is $154 billion a year.
Right.
Human welfare is $41 billion a year.
You know, it's just as bad what they don't do, of course, too. I mean, here they are handling out all this corporate welfare, as you say. And then look at what has just completely fallen off our picture in terms of, like, what people consider quote-unquote practical to do in Congress.
Right.
I mean, a national health insurance program has not been debated, you know, since Clinton was in office.
Yeah, and it really
didn't.
Then,
you know, I mean, it wasn't, you know, the national health care that, again, presidents like President Nixon was thinking of.
Or
you know,
President Truman. I mean, Harry Truman was the first guy to propose single-payer health care in the United States.
Right, and that's just considered such a, you know, off the, you know, no one's going to bring that up. Instead, what Congress has been doing in the last few years, if it's done anything, is, you know, talk about some pieces of legislation that are maybe worthwhile, like patient rights legislation where you can sue your HMO. But you know what? You need health insurance before you can sue your HMO.
Right. So Nancy Watzman, the author of Is That a Politician in Your Pocket? Or the co-author, Washington and $2 Million a Day. Nancy, we've got about a minute and a half left here. What can we, the people, do about this? What can our listeners do to help bring about clean money in politics in the United States?
Well, get involved. Visit our website, www.publiccampaign.org. I also urge people to visit our website that's devoted to Arizona and a battle that's happening there this November to keep the election system in place there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's www.keeparizonaclean.com.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all kinds of ways you can get involved. You know,
for example,
you can sign up with us. We'll keep you informed. And
But how about just one example of what people can do?
What people can do is all kinds of things. You can run a house party to, you know, collect contributions to keep Arizona clean, small contributions.
Mm-hmm.
You can write letters to the editor. We'll help you learn, you know, we'll help you do it. We'll, you know, you can write opinion pieces for your paper.
So you're talking about political activism here, basically, grassroots political activism.
Absolutely.
Get out.
From the grassroots is where this has to happen.
Yeah. Get out and get active. Is there any legislation in Congress that people should be, you know, waving the flag for?
There's legislation in the House for clean money campaign reform. Again, people can find out more about that on our website.
Okay. And your website is www.publiccampaign. Are there two C's in there or one?
There's one C, all one word,
okay.
And it's .org.
Okay. Publiccampaign.org. And we're going to be talking to Nancy Watzman, the author of Is That a Politician in Your Pocket? Washington on $2 Million a Day. Nancy, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Do appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes past the hour. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry, there's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.com.
Org.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. 20% of Iraq veterans who were in at least five firefights are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, according to a new study by the New England Journal of Medicine. PTSD is debilitating, causing headaches, sleeplessness, hypervigilance, and depression. The disorder has plagued a total of 12.6% of soldiers returning from Iraq, and the chances of suffering from it only increases with the amount of time spent in combat zones.
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
"To discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. I rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find this sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species."
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I hear something saying,
and welcome back. Oh, they're going to hoo-ha again. Okay. I thought we were getting to the refrain there. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. SeptemberSurprise.com is collecting suggestions for what's going to be the October surprise or the September surprise or the November surprise. Could even be the 1st of November. And we're going to get a thread going on this on our message board, and we're going to actually run a contest off of there. Although the SeptemberSurprise.com site is doing kind of cool, too. But, you know, for giving away the copy of October Surprise that Mike Toth has found out in the Ethernet out there for us, the Internet. Here's a couple new. Jim Turr sent this to me. One guy says, I would venture that this August surprise, a terrorist will abandon an explosive-laden truck and escape. In other words, it'll be a close call. Announcing the breakup of a huge terrorist cell, planning to disrupt the November elections. And here's a couple new ones. The Saudis announced they will replace U.S. troops within a year, to be followed right after the election by a retraction of the offer. I got to tell you, there was all this publicity when Bob Woodward's book came out about how Prince Bandar Bush, right? I mean, he's so close to the Bush family, they actually call him Bandar Bush. Prince Bandar of Saudi Arabia, a member of the royal family, I believe he's the Saudi ambassador to the United States. I could be wrong, but anyhow, Prince Bandar had told George W. Bush about a year ago, it must have been a little more than a year ago, when Bob Woodward was writing his book, that don't worry, oil prices are going to go up right up through the summer of 2004. But in time for the election, September, October, November, we will make sure that the oil prices go back down. Now, there are a lot of folks who are expecting that to happen. and thinking that Saudi Arabia is going to be behind it because they're going to be pumping oil like crazy. Let me disabuse you of that notion. First of all, Saudi Arabia is already pumping oil like crazy. And there are two reasons why they're doing that. One, they're being leaned on really hard by the Bush administration and are pumping, as from the last news report I saw, pumping at capacity right now. So they can't go any faster, any farther. And secondly, they're pumping as fast as they can because oil is at an all-time high price right now. They're making money hand over fist, $44 a barrel. I mean, a year ago they were pumping oil, you know, just 10% lower, and they were getting 20-something a barrel. So, or a couple of years ago. So, you know, they're doing this. But I think that there's been a sea change in Saudi Arabia. And I think that these guys have figured out that George W. Bush is out for George W. Bush and not for anybody else. And all the nice words, and yeah, he took millions of dollars from the bin Laden family to bail out Harkin Energy, to bail out his failing oil companies back in the 70s and the 80s. And yes, he's, you know, his daddy's been business partners with the senior bin Laden, and he was, you know, been business with bin Laden's brother and all this stuff, and they're wired into the Saudi oil family. But when push came to shove around Iraq, and it became clear that there were no weapons of mass destruction, and Saddam did not represent a threat to the United States, what did George Bush say? He said, well, we went into Iraq because we want to bring democracy to the Middle East. What's the last thing the Saudi royal family wants? Democracy in the Middle East. It's a direct threat to the Saudi royal family. And once George Bush started talking about that's why he went into Iraq, and that's a noble cause, and that's what we need to support, every time he said it, he was slapping him in the face, and they knew it, I think that they're just saying, enough. Enough. You know, we'll pump your oil, but don't expect any big favors. I mean, they've got their own problem with terrorists in their own backyard right now. They're fighting for their survival, the Saudi royal family. But I suspect that they're not fighting for the Bush empire any longer. Time will tell, but that's my take on it. 29 minutes past the hour. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
OSHA has been ordered by a federal judge to release the names of companies with the worst safety records. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration had denied a Freedom of Information Act request filed in 2002 by the New York Times. OSHA had identified 13,000 companies as having injury and illness rates greater than the national average. The decision came down last week, and OSHA has 60 days to appeal.
Drug maker Bristol-Myers Squibb agreed this week to pay $150 million to shareholders for overstating its revenue by $2.5 billion from 1999 through 2001. The Securities and Exchange Commission levied one of the largest penalties ever against Bristol-Myers Squibb for accounting fraud involving wholesalers. The drug maker refused to acknowledge any wrongdoing, but did agree to take on an independent accounting investigator to monitor future financial reporting activities.
First, it was United Airlines, then U.S. Airways. Now Delta has joined the pension battle. The Airline Pilots Association has rejected a call for $1 billion in wage cuts at Delta. The pilots had offered wage, benefit, and job cuts amounting to between $655 and $705 million. Delta responded by asking for additional changes to the pension plan, eliminating night differentials, and a pay cut of 35%. The airline is now considering Chapter 11 restructuring.
More than 1,500 people rallied outside Las Vegas Aladdin Casino on Wednesday, demanding that the new owners recognize employees' culinary workers' union. Planet Hollywood is set to take over control of the casino in less than a month and is insisting on an election rather than a card check neutrality agreement. The union says a majority of workers have signed cards in support of forming a union, but management wants an election, which would give them ample time to launch an anti-union campaign. The Aladdin Hotel is one of only three casinos on the Vegas Strip that doesn't have a union.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A limited survey of 1,600 employers across the nation conducted by a human resources consulting firm suggests paychecks won't be getting much larger in the near future. Mercer Human Resources survey predicts an average pay increase of 3.3% for the U.S. workforce this year and a 3.5% average next year. This outpaces the rate of inflation, but not by much. Healthcare costs may be eating into wage hike budgets, especially when employer premiums are forecast to rise by double-digit percentages next year.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
When the night has come and the land is dark.
When the night has come and when the land is dark, then the Saudis will announce. Well, we already did that one. Okay, they'll announce they're going to replace the U.S. troops. As I said, I don't think so. Here's another one, another possible September surprise or October surprise. Saddam will die in prison, giving bloodthirsty re-thugs a sense of closure they've longed for ever since W signed his last death warrant in Texas. This is an email from JBK. He says, they are looking into a lead on the anthrax. Kind of funny how that disappeared and conveniently came up at this time of year. Hopefully that's what it is, because I worked in the AMI building, he says, and I knew Bob and Ernie enough to know something was amiss. He says, let me say here and now that if something comes out of that, someone in our country had something to do with anthrax. 9/11 could surely have been part of the whole plan. Well, there are a lot of people saying that. It's not just Dave in Humboldt County. I mean, there's a lot of folks going, scratching their heads, reading, the New Pearl Harbor and other books like that, and saying, there's stuff here that just doesn't add up. Here's some other submissions. Putin's Russia announces it'll send 40,000 troops to Iraq in September. Well, again, this is the thing. George Bush has alienated so many leaders around the world, and frankly, it looks to me like he's managed to alienate Putin as well. And Putin, at the same time, is moving away from democracy and closer to authoritarian rule. I mean, Putin is turning Russia back into a feudal state. It's going back in the direction it was under the czars, in my opinion, and it's a dangerous time for them. Maybe. I mean, we'll see. That seems to be the trend line. Let's hope that it gets reversed, or at least that it stops. Another way to frame it would be that Putin has realized that the free market that the cons have said, this is how it should be a free market, produces a feudal state, produces a disaster. And he's trying to figure out how much intervention by the state is necessary in order to have a market that functions cleanly and efficiently and does a good job, and yet at the same time doesn't cause business to end up running government. Could be. I don't know. I'm not a Russian. It's been a couple of years since I've been there. I could see it going either way, frankly. And time will tell. Here's another one. October. Cheney's doctor advises him not to run. Giuliani takes the number two spot. I've been predicting that for over a year. November. Announcement that a radical domestic terror group unhappy with the Democratic platform has plans to attack voters in Democratic precincts. Can't you just see Tom Ridge and John Ashcroft calling a news conference and getting up there and in their very serious...
Well, we have reason to believe that they're...
This is on November 1st, right? The day before the election.
We have reason to believe that there are terrorists who are specifically upset with the Democratic Party's position on gay marriage.
Well, the Democratic Party is actually against gay marriage, but you know, with the fact that there's a lot of Democrats who support gay marriage or the civil unions, and these people are all members of a radical Islamic sect that says you can have up to four wives as long as they're of the opposite sex from you, and therefore they're going to be attacking polling places looking for Democrats. I don't see it happening. I don't, you know. But, you know, this is, I mean, there's so much weirdness going on out here. Here's an email from from Brian in Greenville, Michigan. Brian says, I do not have medical insurance. Oh, Victoria Jones is on the line. Hey, I didn't see it there. Victoria Jones, our Washington correspondent. Hey, Victoria, what's up?
Well, it's a Friday, which tends to be a fairly quiet day in Washington, D.C., and today is no exception. The flap about the closure of streets in Washington and the basic barricading of the city continues. But other than that, people are pretty obsessed with the ads from the Swift Boats for Truth group that attacked John Kerry's service in Vietnam. That's what the pundits are talking about.
That's the buzz right now in the city.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. When you talk about the flap over the city being locked down, I think most of the rest of the country doesn't really have a clue. I mean, is there really blowback from the citizens, and is political heat building up, or is this just, you know, people kind of grumbling because that's
There's starting to be blowback from the citizens. I mean, it's only been 4 days.
Yeah.
And it is August. People are on vacation. Come the day after Labor Day, it's going to be an absolute nightmare. This city has the second or worst, third worst traffic in the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, sorry, in the country. Sorry, I wouldn't suggest that we got worse than Bombay.
No, yeah, I've been there.
So it's pretty bad. And they're not talking about reopening streets because they very rarely do once they close them, which is one of the concerns people have. Because other streets that were closed as a result of Oklahoma bombing and September the 11th never were reopened. So people's concerns are that they won't be reopened. The city becomes more and more locked down, less and less available to the citizenry. And the question is, well, what can you do? Can you stop the feds from doing this? And it gets to be kind of complicated because it comes back to, you know, who owns D.C., who controls D.C., what power does D.C. have, which is not really very much. But, no, it is starting to become prohibitive. You can't get around. We already have the firefighters saying, we've got a problem. We're going to have a problem with our response times because we can't get around.
Isn't this all consistent with the Bush administration's worldview, though, that now that they have control of the government, it's not about we the people. Dick Cheney can meet with whomever he wants in private. George Bush can hide his records as governor, you know, blah, 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 that, you know, secrecy and power is what it's all about.
It seems to have something along those lines. I mean, certainly... President Bush isn't impacted by any of this, and because everything closes down when he comes by in his motorcade anyway.
Yeah.
Same with Vice President Cheney. I do think, though, that if this increases, some of the members of Congress, including Republicans, who commute to work from Washington, D.C. and from Virginia and Maryland, as well as their staffers, once they start getting impacted adversely by this, and they start to look at it and think, okay, is this the most sensible way to protect us? Because it's not that people don't want to be protected. It's that they're saying, this isn't the most efficient way to do it. This isn't how they do it elsewhere in the world. They don't just close down their cities. Then I think we might start to see something.
Yeah.
But this is an issue. I mean, this is the people's city. This is, you know, the city is dependent on tourism, very heavily dependent on tourism. And people are just... We're afraid people are going to stop coming.
Yeah. Well, I'm still predicting that this is going to last until after the Republican National Convention, and that this has to do with New York. But that's my wacko conspiracy theory of the week.
Well, you could be right. Conspiracy theories have been right before now.
Yeah. Well, that's because occasionally there are actually conspiracies.
Right.
Speaking of which, do you think that this so-called Swift Boat Veterans for Truth? Now, they've already got one of these guys who's in this ad has come out and recanted so far today.
Which one? Who recanted? I missed that.
I've got it right here. It will take me just a moment. Mr. Elliot. Elliot says, it was a terrible mistake, probably, for me to sign the affidavit with those words, I'm the one in trouble here. I knew I was wrong. In a hurry, I signed it and faxed it back. That was a mistake. Amazing. Huh?
I wonder, what did he say in the affidavit?
He said that John Kerry shot a guy in the back.
Oh, that story of the fleeing teenager.
Yeah, yeah.
So that story now turns out to be completely untrue.
That's right. That's right. And in fact...
And that's been incredibly damaging. I mean, that's just an appalling thing.
Yeah, and in fact, in the ad, Elliot says John Kerry has not been honest about what happened in Vietnam. And he won his Silver Star for action on February 28, 1969, in which he shot a Viet Cong soldier who had been carrying a rocket launcher and running toward a hut. All of Kerry's crewmates who participated and are still living said in interviews last year that the action was necessary and appropriate. And it was Elliot who recommended Kerry for the Silver Star, although he wasn't there. He was the senior officer who wrote the thing up. In an interview for a 7-part biographical series that appeared in the Globe last year, Kerry said, I didn't have second questions about killing the Viet Cong. He was running away with a live B-40, and I thought, poised to turn it around and fire it. Asked whether that meant he was shot the girl in the back, Kerry said, no, absolutely not, adding that the enemy had been running to a hut for cover where he could then fire at Kerry's boat and destroy it and kill the crew. And this guy apparently now is saying, yep, that's what happened.
Wow.
And so he's...
Well, it'll be interesting to see if this guy does a fair amount of interviews on TV and if the press give this the same kind of coverage that they very irresponsibly gave yesterday to these charges, which they repeated as though they were the truth.
Oh, and Fox News. I mean, it's just incredible. But do you think that it seems to me that this thing could backfire big time.
Well, I think it could backfire. I mean, I think it could still go either way. But I think if any more people stand up and recant, it is certainly going to look very bad. But I don't know that it'll backfire. I think it'll probably just fade away.
Yeah.
And I don't think it'll necessarily damage the Bush campaign because they've already said that they had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, wink, wink, nod, nod. And, in fact, it turns out that the woman who apparently put this all together has quite a few ties to the Bush family. She is the wife of the guy who was the business partner with John O'Neill, who, you know, goes back to Nixon. But it's, where did it go here? Well, anyhow, I've got, wrong page. Well, you don't want to hear all this, right?
Yeah, I do. Actually.
Oh, you do?
Okay,
here it
yeah.
is. Her name is Spaeth, Mary Spaeth, and her ex-husband, who died of a heart attack just in January this year, was Tex Lazar. He was the former law partner of John O'Neill, who's the guy who Richard Nixon was coaching to debate John Kerry back in 1968.
Right, him I know about.
Spaeth, although not as well known as Karen Hughes, Spaeth is among the most experienced and best-connected Republican communications executives. During the Reagan administration, she served as director of the White House Office of Media Liaison. While living in Washington, she met and married Lazar, a Reagan Justice Department lawyer who ran for lieutenant governor of Texas in 1994 with George W. Bush.
Uh-huh.
What a surprise. She was the wife of George Bush's running mate in 94 for Texas. And then she, he was a member of he was, oh, she met O'Neill. O'Neill is a partner in Clemens, O'Neill, Pierce, Wilson, and Fulkerson, a Dallas law firm.
That's right.
And the Wilson of O'Neill, Pierce, Wilson is Margaret Wilson, who was the former lawyer to Governor George Bush.
Right, that I know.
And followed him to Washington, D.C., where she served as deputy counsel in the Department of Commerce. So, you know, this group, this so-called group that put together this ad, is to say that they're not wired into the Bush campaign is sort of like saying the sky's not blue. I mean, or to the Bush administration, you know, it's... So, anyhow, we'll see.
It is quite extraordinary.
Yeah, it is. And frankly, I think tragic.
And the book's number one on Amazon.
Well, that's just because of Drudge. You know, Drudge has been flogging it, and Fox has been flogging. And now, did you see this morning, the president of the corporation of News Corp, which owns Fox News, came out this morning and endorsed John Kerry.
Amazing.
Yeah, figure that one out. Anyhow, Victoria, thank you for the call. Any other hot news that we need to know about? Or
no, this is really it. It really is a fairly quiet day. Things will heat up again next week as the various House and Senate committees continue their hearings on the results of the 9/11 Commission.
Yeah.
And we'll have a lot more to report about that. I expect that to be fairly lively.
Yeah. Okay, great. Victoria, our correspondent from Washington, D.C., thank you very much for
thank
the call.
Thank you.
Great to hear from you. Have a great weekend. It's 14 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894. Our number, Donna in New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, Donna, what's up?
Hi, Tom. It's my first time calling into your show.
Well, that's great.
And I
want to
tell you, I think you're one of the most altruistic voices for democracy that exists today.
Well, thank you, I think.
Well, that's a compliment.
Presumably.
I recently read an article. It was last week, Village Voice Online, Cindy Schoenberg, concerning Kerry's attempt to bury some POW MIA stuff back in the 80s, I think it was. And in that article was also mentioned some charges against John McCain for the same thing. And this issue is getting a lot of attention, and I know it's being politicized, but Sidney Schoenberg is a pretty reputable journalist and well regarded for his coverage of Vietnam when he worked for the New York Times, and then I think after that he worked for Newsday. I'm just wondering if you had a chance to read that article and what your thoughts are on that.
I haven't, Don. The essence of it that back when McCain and Kerry were working together to try and bring about a reconciliation between Vietnam and America, that there might have been some inconvenient facts in the way and that they deep-sixed them to make things...
Actually,
he's
accused of sabotaging or subterfuge.
Really?
Both he and McCain bearing information in an effort to reestablish commerce with Vietnam. And I do recommend you check it out. I think it's a much more legitimate issue concerning the Vietnam aspect of Kerry.
Yeah.
And it's one because Schoenberg is so well respected. I don't think we can ignore that issue.
Yeah. The tough part about that, and I will check it out. The tough part about that is that. As soon as you say Vietnam to anybody who is more than 45 years old right now, there's just no black. There's no gray. I mean, it's black or white. It's and particularly anybody who knew anybody who died over there. Those MIA families were just a thorn in the side of Washington D.C. politicians for decades. Insisting that there were still, all the stories that were coming out through the 70s and the 80s and the 90s about the sightings of POWs that were still being held by Vietnam. And there was a pretty good consensus in the intelligence community that there's nobody being held over there. If there was, Vietnam would give them up because they wanted commerce. But there were just conspiracy theories were rife. But who knows? I mean, I'll check it out.
It's a pretty relevant article, and he cites his sources. And I just in an effort to have a balanced approach here, I know it's become very political, hot potato, that sort of thing, but it is a really excellent piece.
What might be the motivation of Kerry and McCain? I mean, neither one of these guys own businesses that do business in Vietnam. It's not like, Halliburton and Cheney.
Well, I don't have the article in front of me, but basically the gist of what I got was that they, in an effort to reestablish ties with Vietnam for the purposes of economics or commerce or whatever you want to say, they buried some information, they destroyed some information, and he cites his sources. It's a very direct piece, and that's about as much as I can say on it.
Okay.
But I do recommend Village Voice Online.
I will check it out.
Thanks, Tom.
Donna, thanks for the call. Great to
Bye-bye.
Hear from you. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman program. You are in the real free speech zone. No barbed wire. No razor wire, no chain link fences. Just, the telephone, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like. And stick around, we'll be right back.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war. And Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Mega media giant Clear Channel Communications refused to allow an anti-war group to buy space on a billboard in Times Square during the Republican National Convention through Election Day. But public pressure forced Clear Channel to finally accept an ad showing a giant peace dove and a ticker displaying the cost of the war in Iraq in dollars. The 150-foot-long sign will be displayed at Broadway and 42nd Street. WIN correspondent Rebecca Miles reports.
Project Billboard, an anti-war group based in California and interested in encouraging public debate, filed a lawsuit against Clear Channel Communications alleging breach of contract. What is at stake is a billboard advertisement that Project Billboard contracted to run with Clear Channel. The advertisement featured a red, white, blue character of a bomb with the caption, "Democracy is better taught by example, not by war." Clear Channel rejected the first advertisement, saying they were not going to run bomb copy in New York City. Project Billboard then replaced the bomb image with a red and white blue dove, accompanied by the same words, but this was also rejected. They claimed that Clear Channel had suggested that the billboard be an image of a little girl waving a flag. Clear Channel Communications is one of the nation's largest media companies with close ties to National Republicans. I asked Deborah Rappaport, founder of the Project Billboard, whether she thought the debate had begun, as Clear Channel Communications' rejection of the billboard had started a flurry of debate in television and newspaper stories.
This was never our intent to get into any sort of a fight like this. We're not unhappy that our message is getting out, but we would be many, many, many times happier if it were getting out in the mode that we had chosen.
We put a call into Clear Channel Communications for comment, but it by news broadcast had no response. For the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Rebecca Miles in New York.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Before you went to work this morning in the city, well, did you spend some time with your family?
And welcome back. 4.5 minutes before the hour. Fox News's Fox News Channel's Hannity and Combs and MSNBC's Scarborough Country both gave free airtime on August 4th to a new misleading ad sponsored by so-called Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, notes Media Matters for America, MediaMatters.org. Both programs devoted to the ad, airing the day before its scheduled release, left out key facts. So this is the ad that John McCain said was dishonest and dishonorable. In the new ad, members of Swift Boat Veterans for Truth claim they, quote, served with John Kerry. That's sort of like saying that, if anybody who was in Vietnam, I mean, these guys were in Vietnam the same time he was, along with a couple hundred thousand other guys. But none of them were on the boat with him. None of them in this ad. Not one of them. None of them knew him. One of them was a commander of his, you know, a guy up the chain who signed the paperwork for one of his medals. And that's the guy who's recanted now, who said, well, you know, I shouldn't have signed that fax that these guys sent me when they were writing this book that has become part of the ad now. He's feeling very badly. But the fact that none of these guys served with John Kerry, I mean, to say that they did is, you know, my dad was in the occupation of Japan after World War II. Is that, did he serve with MacArthur? Well, I suppose you could say so, but, you know, I don't think that that's, anyhow. So, not letting the truth deter him, Sean Hannity, the serial liar that he is, said, these are the people that know John, know him best. These, in the reality, as Hannity had to have known, because it's been out since May. I mean, these charges have been around since May, and they've been refuted repeatedly. These guys didn't know him at all. And then Hannity went on to say, some of his fellow crewmates, no, sorry, Sean, they were not fellow crewmates. And then even Pat Halpern, the guy who's filling in for Alan Combs, you know, the designated punching bag, called him some of John Kerry's crewmates. I mean, even the lefty on Fox is lying. Joe Scarborough, these guys served with John Kerry in Vietnam. What is wrong with this picture? And you wonder why 70% of the people who watch Fox News think that we have found WMDs and Iraq was responsible for 9/11. Whereas, you know, the majority of Americans now realize neither one of those things are true. This is just tragic. Absolutely tragic. This kind of filthy, gutter advertising and then being, you know, promoted by these guys. Anyhow, it's a Tom Hartman program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available at bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
OSHA has been ordered by a federal judge to release the names of companies with the worst safety records. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration had denied a Freedom of Information Act request filed in 2002 by the New York Times. OSHA had identified 13,000 companies as having injury and illness rates greater than the national average. The decision came down last week, and OSHA has 60 days to appeal.
Drug maker Bristol-Myers Squibb agreed this week to pay $150 million to shareholders for overstating its revenue by $2.5 billion from 1999 through 2001. The Securities and Exchange Commission levied one of the largest penalties ever against Bristol-Myers Squibb for accounting fraud involving wholesalers. The drug maker refused to acknowledge any wrongdoing, but did agree to take on an independent accounting investigator to monitor future financial reporting activities.
First, it was United Airlines, then U.S. Airways. Now Delta has joined the pension battle. The Airline Pilots Association has rejected a call for $1 billion in wage cuts at Delta. The pilots had offered wage, benefit, and job cuts amounting to between $655 and $705 million. Delta responded by asking for additional changes to the pension plan, eliminating night differentials, and a pay cut of 35%. The airline is now considering Chapter 11 restructuring.
More than 1,500 people rallied outside Las Vegas Aladdin Casino on Wednesday, demanding that the new owners recognize employees' culinary workers' union. Planet Hollywood is set to take over control of the casino in less than a month and is insisting on an election rather than a card check neutrality agreement. The union says a majority of workers have signed cards in support of forming a union, but management wants an election, which would give them ample time to launch an anti-union campaign. The Aladdin Hotel is one of only three casinos on the Vegas Strip that doesn't have a union.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A limited survey of 1,600 employers across the nation conducted by a human resources consulting firm suggests paychecks won't be getting much larger in the near future. Mercer Human Resources survey predicts an average pay increase of 3.3% for the U.S. workforce this year and a 3.5% average next year. This outpaces the rate of inflation, but not by much. Healthcare costs may be eating into wage hike budgets, especially when employer premiums are forecast to rise by double-digit percentages next year.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
The official line of the powers that be is that corporations simply do what their customers want. It's nothing but supply and demand in action, they tell us. The glorious free market in excelsis Deo. Nice theory, but reality is another story. For example, thanks to insider tapes from Enron that George Bush's Justice Department was recently forced to release, we can hear the free market thoughts of one Enron trader talking to another about all the money they stole from those poor grandmothers in California by manipulating the energy market in 2001. Yeah, Grandma Millie, man, but she's the one who couldn't figure out how to blankety-blank vote on the butterfly ballot. Yeah, now she wants her blankety-blank money back for all the power you've charged right up, jammed right up her blankety-blank for blankety-blank $250 a megawatt hour. Enron executives used market manipulation techniques that they colorfully dubbed Sidewinder, Russian Roulette, Ping Pong, and Donkey Punch. Charming, huh? Other Enroners brag on the tapes about cheating still more poor grandmothers, about shutting down an Enron-controlled power plant to drive up electricity prices, about how awesome it will be if Enron's honcho, Kenny Boy Lay, is chosen by his pal Bush to be the new energy secretary. Alas for Kenny Boy, Enron was crashing, and he was too politically hot to get the energy job, but George still helped him out. For the first several months of his administration, he deliberately forestalled demands to impose price controls to stop Enron's gouging of West Coast consumers. In that time, the corporation essentially stole billions of dollars from its unsuspecting customers, and Kenny Boy himself was able to bail out with a $100 million golden parachute. This is Jim Hightower saying, corporations today don't operate in a free market. They operate in a greed market, aided and abetted by the political puppets they put in office.
Hi, this is Doug Dupuy for SelectQuote, and I just called...
Cheryl Payne.
One of SelectQuote's licensed agents.
Hi, Mr. Dupuy.
Hi, Cheryl. Why buy term life insurance through SelectQuote instead of somebody else?
Well, Mr. Dupuy, about 2 out of 3 people have health or lifestyle issues. Could be high blood pressure, skydiving. Now, depending on what insurance company you choose, you could overpay hundreds of dollars a year.
Well, where does SelectQuote come in?
SelectQuote's a real matchmaker. We impartially shop the pick of America's top life insurers to match you with your best buy.
Got an example?
Sure. I just matched a man man, 40 years old, who takes cholesterol medication with a $500,000 policy for under $22 a month.
Quite a match, Cheryl. Why not let SelectQuote match you with your Best Buy? Just call 1-800-772-8300. That's 1-800-772-8300. Or log on to SelectQuote.com.
Examples: First Colony Preferred, Best Colony, 10-year term, policy form 1420 and 1421 et al. Underwritten by First Colony Life Insurance Company, a GE Financial Assurance Company, Lynchburg, Virginia. Policy subject to underwriting approval, available in most states.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, that's an interesting one. In our chat room, you get to our chat room by going to TomHartman.com. Click on the chat link. It'll take you to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. Drop in there and just push the chat button once you get there. Discussion. Question, are the libertarians, the party that came out of the objectivist movement, that came out of the book Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand back in the 1950s, and has become, through the Cato Institute and whatnot, part of the philosophical driving wheel of the modern neoconservative movement, or the new conservative movement, let's say. The neocons are sort of a different animal. Are they going to pull more votes away from Republicans or Democrats? You know, on the one hand, they are openly corporatist. They think, you know, anything government does is wrong, except for, you know, protecting our borders and offering police services. They're in favor of socialist police, but that's it. Largely. And so the cons, you know, embrace that. Yes, let the corporations rule. I mean, they don't get it that if there's nobody, that if we the people cannot defend ourselves through our own elected institutions from the sociopaths among us who would seek to use corporate power or financial power to harm us and enrich themselves, then, you know, then we're toast. I mean, government shouldn't be doing that. Shouldn't be protecting people from other people. Well, who's going to? I mean, the libertarian ideal works well, I suppose, if you've got a community of fewer than 150 people and everybody knows everybody, or to some extent it may work well. But what happens when you get society large enough that people can function anonymously? And corporations can function try and call the president of your insurance company. Try and register a complaint with the CEO of your car maker. You know, it ain't going to happen. For example, I've had this email from Brian in Greenville, Michigan. He says, I do not have medical insurance, and the hospital insists on charging me approximately three times the rate they charge people with insurance. And this is real, my friends. This is in hospitals all across America. If you walk into a hospital and have a procedure done and your insurance company does not pay for it, you don't have insurance, you're going to pay between two and three times what the insurance companies do, because the insurance companies have these bulk deals with the hospitals where they say, okay, you know, we'll buy $1 million worth of services. We want a discount. And the hospitals typically give them discounts of in excess of 60% off. Now, what's really going on, because the insurance companies constitute the majority of the business that the hospitals do, is that 60% off is actually the price that the hospitals are putting on their services. And if you walk in without insurance, they're going to stick it to you. This is, you know, this is their super profit margin. This is how Bill Frist's family became multi-hundred millionaires. And so Brian in Michigan, he says, over a period of at least 7 months, I attempted to resolve the dispute with his hospital. He's just trying to get them to charge him what they would charge somebody who had insurance. He had the exact same procedure done. Right? He says, I failed. I don't think the failure was mine. They have a great deal of experience dealing with sick people, and they know that sick people want to put the whole experience behind them and get on with their lives. And if they die, the hospital can file a claim against their estate and get paid that way. This hospital's strategy seemed to be to cause me as much frustration and anguish as possible until I reached the point where I would have no choice but to give in. That probably works with most people. Ah, but they didn't know. Brian is tenacious. He says, the reason I'm going public by posting this article is that when the hospital sues me, either they will sue me in small claims court where I will not be given enough time to present my case, or if they sue me in regular court, it will be years before the case comes up. I'm hoping that by posting this article now, others may benefit from my experience. They're out there, you know, shaking the trees. Wake up, folks. By the way, it's Friday. Feel free to call on any topic if you'd like, at 1-866-889-8894. You know, any day of the week, actually, you're welcome to call on any topic you want. But Friday in particular, it's the end of the week. What the heck? Teresa Carey, is she an asset or a liability to the Carey campaign? Increasingly, according to this article by Nedra Pickler of the Associated Press, yesterday's AP, it's showing up in newspapers all over the country today. Increasingly, women across the United States are viewing Teresa Heinz Carey as an asset and a role model. Many women along the Democratic campaign trail are telling Teresa Heinz Carey to keep speaking her mind. To them, the sassy, gabby wife of presidential candidate John Kerry is a key part of the package they want to put in the White House. Interesting. Even Laura Bush weighed in on that. I'll share that with you in just a second. Let's take a call here. 1-866-889-8894. Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Roy, what's up?
Hi, Tom. A couple little quick comments on Brian's letter. Boy, do I feel for him. I just got my wife's new health insurance premium for this 6 months. It's up 19.4% over the last 6 months.
Oh, yeah. It's incredible. We pay for our own health insurance, and it's just going through the roof.
One little piece of criticism, when you mentioned Frisk, I wish you would always remember to repeat and remind folks that they made their money not only by messing with the consumers, they did it by defrauding the government.
And they paid a $700 million fine for that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The thing that I actually called for, and it's a question, and I didn't have time to watch it a lot, but when Bush was addressing the reporters this morning, I caught three questions, and every time when he got a question, he looked down like he was looking for a BlackBerry or a laptop or something, because he was accessing kinesthetic. He wasn't going.
That's exactly what was going on.
And I wondered if you had seen that, because it looked like he was looking at something rather than accessing.
Yeah, see, well, it's hard to say, but I can tell you from watching George Bush enough, people who don't know what accessing kinesthetic means, here's how it works. And you can see this with your friends. People generally tend to have one primary way that they experience the world, one way that they live in the world. They either are primarily aware of the way the world looks. They live in the visual world. They're primarily aware of the way the world sounds. They live in an auditory world. Or they're primarily aware of how things feel and how they feel about things. And they live in a kinesthetic or a feeling world. They access memory through their feelings. Auditory people access memory through words. Visual people access memory through pictures. And my wife, very visual, you ask her somebody's name, she will look up and she will see the letters. She looks for the spelling of it. You ask me somebody's name and I'm looking for the sound of it. I'm very auditory. And I'm convinced that George Bush, a big part of George Bush's problem with mangling the English language is that he's extremely kinesthetic. And that doesn't necessarily mean that somebody, in fact, it doesn't at all mean that somebody is dumb. It just means that they store things in their feelings. They store information in their feelings. And that's why kinesthetic people very often take a little extra time to get information out, because it's hard to translate feelings into words or pictures, frankly. And one of the things I thought was really interesting, too, when I first was really getting into this stuff, about 70% of people in American society are visual, about 20% auditory, about 5 or 10% kinesthetic. Among indigenous people, among people who were raised in indigenous societies, whether it's Native Americans or indigenous or tribal Africans or Asians, or, you know, I've been all over the world, hung out with a bunch of indigenous people in different continents. I'd say 70-80% of them are kinesthetic. And whereas if you talk to the same people, I mean, if you talk to somebody who lives who grew up on an Indian reservation in out west, you're going to find that they're going to be looking down a lot, and they will pause before they speak, and they're accessing their feelings, and they talk about feelings a lot. They say, you know, well, that has a lot of heart. You know, I have a strong, you know, I have a good sense.
Oh,
for
I agree with that. But
interestingly, correctly. if you talk to their relatives who grew up in Phoenix, for example, in the city. Or in,
right.
in Santa Fe, and grew up in, you know, quote, white culture or whatever you want to call that, Western culture. They're primarily visual, and so I think this is a cultural thing. But in any case, I think that George Bush is primarily kinesthetic, and so if he's looking down a lot, I didn't catch the press conference this morning, but if he's looking down a lot, I think he's just dropping into his feelings, and that's, you know.
This particular one, though, it looked like he was going after, like somebody was feeding him things, and it. I guess what I got to thinking about was there was a debate a couple days ago, and they caught one of the debaters was getting answers off his BlackBerry.
Well, you know, it wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me at all.
I thought back to where he had that feed where he absolutely butchered the answer like he was trying to listen to somebody through the speakerphone. So anyway, I'll just throw it out there. Maybe people can kind of monitor it.
Yeah, he'd have a hard time doing that on an earpiece. You know, it's funny. I was a guest on a nationally famous right-wing talk show host's program. I'm not going to name him, but because... Well, for whatever reason.
The logic one?
I'm just not going to name him. And when you do the funny way radio works is there's this thing called the cue line where if you have your studio set up that way, this studio is not set up that way, but when I do a remote, for example, it's set up that way. I'm probably going to be reporting from doing this show from the Republican National Convention. So I'll be in New York. Rama's going to be here running the board. He'll say something into the microphone here. I'll hear it in my headphones in New York, but you won't hear it on the air. So he can say, you know, Roy is on line one, right? And so I'll say, hey, Roy is on line one. And so anyhow, I was on this guy's show, and I made some point. We were debating some political thing, and I hear this voice saying to him, tell him about such and such. You know, in other words, coaching him on how to argue with me. And I'm like, who is that? You know? And he goes, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? And I realized it was his producer on cue, you know, guiding him through. Well, you know, George Bush, I don't think he processes fast enough to have an earpiece in, you know, like the televangelists who do the faith healing kind of thing.
Right.
I don't think he could handle that. I don't think he processes fast enough. But if he had a screen, you know, a flat panel screen or something like that, or a BlackBerry, like you say, sitting on a podium and he could look down at it. Wouldn't surprise me. Because he doesn't do well with that stuff, and there's more and more of that kind of thing happening, the prompting of people and supporting them. So.
Anyway, just kind of to bring it up, and maybe people can...
Yeah, we can all start looking for it.
Pay attention, and we'll look forward to hearing. Talk to you later. Enjoyed it.
Okay, great. Thanks for the call, Roy. Good to hear from you. We can all start looking for that. That's interesting. So, and maybe. You know, it actually, the more I think about it, the more sense it makes. And they would just rationalize it as, you know, hey, it's technology. He's got access to experts. Isn't that a wonderful thing? Expertise instantly available. And, you know, looking down at his teleprompter. I mean, if it works for Biley, why wouldn't it work for George Bush? 20 minutes past the hour. Oh, Bill wasn't the guy interviewing me, by the way. Anyway, we'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of
sitting on hold with tech support?
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm sorry. There's nothing more we can do. No one wants to hear those devastating words from a doctor. But that's what millions of Americans suffering from diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and diabetes will be told if you vote for Ralph Nader. Americans who voted for Nader put Bush in the White House in 2000. As president, George W. put the brakes on embryonic stem cell research, which could lead to revolutionary new treatments and cures. John Kerry vows to push this research forward. George W. Bush is still taking orders from the religious right. He wants to stifle stem cell research. This time, don't help him. Don't vote for Ralph. The Committee for the Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate, nor any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't I? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost me.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Yeah, George Bush has his little screen with the text of his responses on. I have my chat room. I'm getting a pinch here. I'll type in, hey, what should I do about this? And I'll 15, 20 opinions. Sometimes it's more rather than less confusing. Sometimes it is so spot on. You got to drop in there sometime and see what it's like. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Mike in Alabama's on the line. Hey, Mike, where in Alabama are you?
I'm in Tuscaloosa.
Oh, that's a fine part of the state.
Yeah, you've been here?
I've been through there, yes.
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah. I originally from Colorado, so I'm getting used to the humidity down here. It actually, in my opinion, makes summers easier.
Hmm, interesting.
Because, you know, you sweat a little more, but your lips aren't drying out, your knuckles aren't cracking, you know.
Hmm, yeah. To each his own. I like the dry air. But anyhow,
where are you?
We're here in central Vermont. Up in
central Vermont.
Where it's actually raining and humid right now.
I worked for a large company about a year and a half ago. I worked there for several years, and I got laid off.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, I actually came back down to go full-time to school down here.
Mm-hmm.
After I got laid off from there, obviously I'm having to start looking around for health insurance for me and my family.
Yeah.
Now, there is health insurance available through the university here, but it's not a very good deal. It's very expensive. So I started shopping around on my own, and I'm within a relatively short time, I started learning all the ins and outs of the insurance industry. The thing that really got to me is when I was an employee of a large corporation, if somebody asked me about nationalizing health care, I would have said, no, it's a stupid idea. Don't ever do it. You know, I'm getting private health insurance right now, and it's a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I'm laid off from the company and I'm on my own as a true independent citizen, I'm realizing that the insurance that I had through that corporation was essentially nationalized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were most large corporate. In fact, a lot. I don't know if it's most, but I know many large corporations actually don't use insurance companies. They self-insure. They run it internally because, you know, once you've got enough people, you develop these huge economies of scale, or they'll work it through something that looks like an insurance company, but it's actually an aggregation of five or six companies or corporations.
This company did use a regular insurance company. I think originally it was through Cigna, and then they used Oxford.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying, though, is that when the corporation popped in their portion of my insurance, let's say 50% of it,
yeah,
okay, for my group rate, they deducted that from their taxes.
That's right.
Okay, and not only that, the company had a fair amount of corporate welfare. I mean, you probably heard the old figure that in the 1955, 50% of the government's income came from corporations and 50% from individuals, and now it's down to like 17% for corporations.
That's right, yeah.
So that company had a fair amount of corporate welfare, and the group insurance that, for instance, my boss, who was a very staunch conservative, was saying this is the way things should be, he was getting taxpayer-supported health care.
Yeah, yeah. And so were you.
Of course I was, yeah. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize it at the time.
Yeah,
because you know, now I have to deal with things like my older daughter has asthma, so she can be insured, but she has a rider on her. So if she has to go to the hospital again, God forbid,
yeah,
for asthma, she won't be covered.
Yeah, here's a real weird one for God forbid. Here's a real weird one for you, Mike. If you go down right now, if you buy your health insurance and say it costs you $500 a month or whatever, that's $500 a month that you have to after taxes. But if you go down to the Secretary of State's office and you incorporate a small business, cost you $350 a year, and have your corporation pay for your health insurance, it's tax deductible to the corporation.
I have a corporation. I should do that.
There you go. I mean, there are literally thousands, hundreds of thousands, probably millions of small corporations in America, and they do. There's two big, you know, loopholes. One is taxes, and the other is a car. If you buy an SUV, if you buy a car that weighs more than 6,000 pounds, you can deduct up to $100,000.
Yeah, I've heard about that. Down here in Alabama, you see a lot of these Hummers that people have deducted from their
corporation. That's right, but you got to do it through a small corporation. But there are literally, you know, millions, probably tens of millions of these small corporations. And you know, most of them are legitimate. You know, it's a CPA, it's a dentist, it's a doctor. They've incorporated. And a lot of them are just, you know, folks who do a little on the side. You make enough. You've got to show a profit for the year, for at least one out of 3 years.
Because I can't show a profit.
Yeah.
Quick thing, you have to leave. I heard the music coming. Up.
Yeah, you want to hold on?
Yeah.
Okay, hang on, Mike. We'll be right back. 29 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman program.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD, and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
OSHA has been ordered by a federal judge to release the names of companies with the worst safety records. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration had denied a Freedom of Information Act request filed in 2002 by the New York Times. OSHA had identified 13,000 companies as having injury and illness rates greater than the national average. The decision came down last week, and OSHA has 60 days to appeal.
Drug maker Bristol-Myers Squibb agreed this week to pay $150 million to shareholders for overstating its revenue by $2.5 billion from 1999 through 2001. The Securities and Exchange Commission levied one of the largest penalties ever against Bristol-Myers Squibb for accounting fraud involving wholesalers. The drug maker refused to acknowledge any wrongdoing, but did agree to take on an independent accounting investigator to monitor future financial reporting activities.
First, it was United Airlines, then U.S. Airways. Now Delta has joined the pension battle. The Airline Pilots Association has rejected a call for $1 billion in wage cuts at Delta. The pilots had offered wage, benefit, and job cuts amounting to between $655 and $705 million. Delta responded by asking for additional changes to the pension plan, eliminating night differentials, and a pay cut of 35%. The airline is now considering Chapter 11 restructuring.
More than 1,500 people rallied outside Las Vegas Aladdin Casino on Wednesday, demanding that the new owners recognize employees' culinary workers union. Planet Hollywood is set to take over control of the casino in less than a month and is insisting on an election rather than a card check neutrality agreement. The union says a majority of workers have signed cards in support of forming a union, but management wants an election, which would give them ample time to launch an anti-union campaign. The Aladdin Hotel is one of only three casinos on the Vegas Strip that doesn't have a union.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A limited survey of 1,600 employers across the nation conducted by a human resources consulting firm suggests paychecks won't be getting much larger in the near future. Mercer Human Resources survey predicts an average pay increase of 3.3% for the U.S. workforce this year and a 3.5% average next year. This outpaces the rate of inflation, but not by much. Healthcare costs may be eating into wage hike budgets, especially when employer premiums are forecast to rise by double-digit percentages next year.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Have you ever got a note from your bank saying,
"Greetings, your account just shrank by 25 or 30 bucks. Sorry, friend, you're out of luck. You bounced a check. That's what it was. It happens to the best of us. Please cover it quick."
And when you do, you find you got another one or two. 'Cause what they done, I never seen it fail. They notified you by the U.S. mail. Cost them almost 40 cents, but more than worth that little expense. 'Cause by the time you receive that letter, their situation got even better. Your first overdraft cost a couple more. Now you own the pile of money for sure.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back. I don't know, but that sounds like Jim Turr from Blue Canyon Productions. Anyhow, I was talking with Mike from Alabama, and Mike, I just wanted to clarify one point. By pointing out that people can incorporate and the corporation will have tax-deductible health insurance, my point was, what's wrong with this picture? We as human beings, we as individual consumers, cannot deduct from our income taxes the cost of health insurance, but a corporation can. And it just doesn't seem right to me.
Oh, I guess in the future we'll all have you'll pop out of the womb and be assigned a corporation.
Well, no, I think part of frankly I haven't read in detail John Kerry's healthcare plan, but I have caught little pieces of it as they've flown by, and it seems that he wants to offer substantial tax deductions to people for healthcare expenses as a beginning point. I mean, I'm in favor of single payer healthcare, which no politician other than maybe Bernie Sanders can actually talk about and get away with. But although I think, frankly, that's what we're going to end up with. It's what we're going to have to end up with. It's the only rational system. But the point is
that single payer, that means?
Single payer is the kind of system that they have in Germany, where I lived for a year, and it was just incredible. It's where there's one payer, which is the government, and the government can negotiate prices, however it works, and you're given a card. card, and you know, you pay a certain percentage of your taxes in as healthcare expense, and you can walk into any doctor and just say, "Hi, here I am." There's usually a small copay, you know, $5, $10, whatever, so that people don't horribly abuse the system. And you go to the hospital. Here's my card. I need a pharmacy. Here's the card. Boom. That's it. It's that simple. You know, no mess, no fuss. See, the thing is right now, and basically it's how Medicare works. Medicare is a single-payer healthcare system. It's how the medical care for the Army works. It's how medical care for Congress works. Those are all single-payer health systems. And Medicare operates on a 1 to 2% overhead. So of $100 that goes through Medicare, $98 to $99 of it actually gets spent on health care. Whereas private health insurance companies, because they have to pay dividends to their stockholders, they have to show a profit, they have to pay their CEOs hundreds of millions of dollars or tens of millions of dollars, they've got to have big fancy corporate headquarters, they've got to have, you know, corporate jets with gold-plated bathroom faucets, they've got to have millions of dollars in advertising. You see these Lance Armstrong ads, you know, where he's talking about, you know, how this drug company saved his life. I mean, they're spending more money on the advertising than they are on saving people's life. They got to spend all this money, and so when $100 goes through the hands of an insurance company, typically somewhere between $13 and $25 of it sticks to the fingers of the insurance company, and the rest ends up actually paying for health care. So if you cut the insurance companies out of the loop, suddenly the cost of health care for the whole nation drops by an amount that is greater than the amount it would cost to insure all the people who are uninsured. Which is why you can have, if we went to a single-payer health care system right now, we can insure 100% of Americans without it costing an extra penny. It's just that you'd have a bunch of health insurance companies that are now out of business. Well, that's great. Then you develop a system, say, okay, we're going to subsidize the development of alternative energies, and all those people can go to work for solar cell companies or something. I mean, you know, it doesn't have to mean the end of the economy. But I'm raving off on another topic here. You wanted to make
There's
one of
a lot
one
of
point.
Topics, man.
Yeah.
I mean, solar panels and all that stuff. I do. That's your book about the ADD.
I've written 7 books about attention deficit.
I've always thought it was completely normal. You know that?
Yeah,
that's kind of what your book is getting at.
Yeah, I think it's part of the spectrum of human normal. Sure.
Yeah, man, it's like unbelievable. A lot of psychiatrists that I've spoken to, friends, they said that they would prescribe drugs to people and ask them, "Well, have you ever tried them yourself?" They're like, "No." You know, it's like it's inconceivable then that they should try this stuff.
Yeah, they really
should. One of them
was,
you know, I called him Mr. Haldol. He was prescribing Haldol to everybody.
Oh, that's an antipsychotic. I mean, that's strong stuff.
Yeah, I said, "Have you ever tried a Haldol?" He said, "No." I said, "Well, why don't you try one someday? Maybe you won't prescribe them as much."
Yeah.
This is an aside, though. The corporation I worked for was in New York, and I spent a large number of time under the fairly fascist state of Rudolph Giuliani.
Mm.
And what I'm a little concerned about is Giuliani might be the candidate in 2008. And
well,
I would do anything to keep him from being elected president of the country. To me, it seems like even if Bush runs the country into the ground, and we end up, you know, destitute, just a huge plane of destruction. If that would keep Rudolph Giuliani out of office, I'd be happy.
Yeah, you know, Giuliani has some interesting baggage. You know, at the very time that his wife was on TV announcing the fact that she was going to stand by her man because he had just been diagnosed with prostate cancer, and she was and he had this campaign going on. You know, he's running for mayor again. And she had been in this Broadway play, scheduled to be in this Broadway play called The Vagina Monologues, which was making the right-wingers very nervous. She said that she was going to stop performing in this play and stand by her man. And at the same moment that she was saying that, New York One, the local TV news station in New York, had a split screen. And on the other half of the screen, they had Giuliani announcing that he was divorcing his wife.
Unbelievable.
At the same time that she was saying that she was going to drop out. And she heard it. And you could, and they had the camera on her face. They said, you know, "We're going to Rudy Giuliani," and they had the camera on her face as she's listening to him saying that he's divorcing her, and this is how she learned about it on camera. And you know, so New Yorkers know about, you know, that you know what's up with Rudy.
I just remember living in a police state. He turned the city into a police state.
Yeah,
and it was, you know, it was just unbelievable. And this was before 9/11. He had City Hall blocked off.
Yeah.
He had bike messengers would practically be thrown in jail.
Yeah, I don't think that there's any chance that he could run for president unless he replaces Halliburton Dick as vice president. I mean,
he was the keynote speaker at the, or he's supposed to be the keynote speaker at the Republican convention.
Yeah, I know, but I don't see it. I think that he's going to run against Hillary for the Senate. frankly, if he's not the vice presidential
candidate. Well, he can't do as much damage there, so I guess it's all right.
Yeah, yeah, we'll see. But
anyway, I'll try to read your book. I read Restack's book, which was awesome.
Yeah, well, good luck. Thanks for the call, Mike. Great to hear
Take
from
care.
You.
Take care. Have a good weekend.
Yeah, you too. Steve in Ames, Iowa is on the line, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
Great.
I just wanted to comment on, I think, the responsibility that some of the converts, the Republicans, have in this election.
Mm-hmm.
Some of my friends are Republican. You know, I've talked to them. I just can't get through to them. And I've heard a lot of Republicans, you know, call in on shows like yours and, you know, say that they're deciding to vote for Kerry.
Yeah, we actually have. Yeah, it's there was a couple of weeks there where we were averaging about one a day.
Right. And I think their responsibility is great because, you know, they know where the other Republicans are coming from.
Yeah.
I think they can better connect, you know, to those people. And that's just something I haven't heard, you know, anyone mention, you know.
There's a huge groundswell, Steve, of across the United States. I frankly think that not only is Kerry going to win this election, but that the Democrats are coming back in a big way. Things swing back and forth. The pendulum goes back and forth. We've had more or less 25 years of the conservative experiment ever since Ronald Reagan came into office, declared war on working people, and unleashed the corporations, stopped enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act that, you know, just a year before Jimmy Carter had been using to take apart AT&T. And you know, we've had the merger and acquisition mania. The greed is good. Bill Clinton was a conservative fiscally. I mean, you know, he continued the process. He pushed NAFTA and GATT and all that sort of thing. And, you know, he was nice to the environment, but I see him as just part of the continuum. And right. And I think that people are getting it. You know, this is wiping out the middle class. This is mm-hmm. devastating our nation. It's bad economics. It's bad foreign policy. Bad economics. And then on top of that, you've got a kleptocracy. You've got, you know, George Bush and Dick Cheney and particularly people like, you know, Tom DeLay, who's got to be one of the, he's certainly the most corrupt politician of my lifetime. And pigs at the trough, just chowing down and leaving the bill for our children and our grandchildren. I think that the majority of Americans, including Republicans, actually want this to be a functional, decent country in which to raise their kids and have their families and live their lives. And, you know, they have difference of opinions about how to get to that goal. But even there, I mean, right across the board, people like John McCain are waking up to the fact that these guys are toxic. These guys are just toxic, this administration. So,
but that doesn't stop him from backing him. I mean,
well, yes and no. I am hearing so often now from Republicans who are saying, you know, maybe I'll go back to voting Republican in 4 years, but right now these guys have gone over the edge.
Yeah, but I don't think that's enough just to vote. I think they need to get out there, and they need to be talking to other Republicans.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones who can connect.
Yeah, and there's a few
liberals,
who are...
We're energizing the base, but I don't think we can connect to the Republicans.
Well, and there's a few who are still trying to save the party. We've had this guy on as a guest about every 3 or 4 months. I'll have him on. I'm drawing a blank on his name right now, but he runs this organization called Republicans for the Environment. And Republicans for Environmental Protection. And he comes on and he openly criticizes the Bush administration and says, you know, how can they do this? You know, and I say, you know, well, they're Republicans. You're a Republican. Why don't you? And he's like, well, we're trying to change it. We're, you know, we're the party of Teddy Roosevelt. We're the party that gave the nation the national parks. And I'm saying, not anymore. You know, they've been hijacked.
The party that's in power now is not the Republican Party.
No. They've been, you know, it's the fascists. It's the corporatists. I realize the word fascist has a lot of people think I mean Hitler, and I don't, because Hitler wasn't ultimately a dictator. But Mussolini's idea of fascism as merging corporate interests and state interests to create an unstoppable power. And, you know, that is the modern corporatist Republican agenda.
Well, I believe you're correct when you say they're fascist, but I don't think it's necessarily a good thing to throw around because it has a negative connotation.
Yeah, it's a word you gotta be careful with.
And it's not, you know, I feel the same thing when conservatives call us communists, you know.
Yeah. Except that we're not really communists.
My beliefs are communist, but I don't want to be called a communist.
Well, you know, we're not really okay. You could if you think that, you know, the state owning the means of production and distribution is an okay thing, then the police department is communist. It's really socialist.
Yeah, but it's the connotation. That
right, the fire department is, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Be careful with that.
I agree, Steve. I agree. It's the extremes of language. On the other hand, I think it's important to educate people about language. That's why I wrote that piece for Common Dreams 2 weeks ago about quoting Henry Wallace, the vice president, Roosevelt's second vice president, about what is a fascist in America and, you know, who are they and what are they up to. Anyhow, thanks for the call, Steve. Good to hear from you.
All right, great show.
Thank you. 1-866-889-8894. 15 minutes before the hour. Teresa Carey, is she an asset? Dawn Davis of Muscoline, Iowa, excitedly greeted Heinz Carey as the tour came through her home state Wednesday, reports the Associated Press. David says she isn't ashamed to acknowledge that she's been known to tell people to shove it and go to hell. Just thinking about all the criticism of Heinz Carey was enough to get her going. Women should not feel that they should kowtow to anyone else's opinion, Davis said in a rapid-fire rant. I told her, you keep speaking your mind and don't let them change you. They just criticize her because they don't have anything else to hang on, and that's the truth. Yeah, what do you think? 1-866-889-8894. Sean in Indianapolis, Indiana on the line. Hey, Sean, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I got a question and a comment. I'm really, really frustrated. I've got a pretty diverse, politically diverse amount. You know, my friends are pretty politically diverse.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody likes Bush, but yet Bush is still neck and neck with Kerry in the quote-unquote polls. What is going on? It's really scary.
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting. Rama Schneider, who occasionally fills in for me here on this program and you know, helps us out and sent me a story this morning that I'm going to be developing. I have to do a little more research on it. But basically, the core of the story was that there are a series of polls being taken in Venezuela right now. And, of course, you know, the administration is opposed to the guy who's the head of Venezuela. Boy, I just drew a blank on his name. But anyway, and that the polls are actually rigged. And that this government, our government, is paying for rigged polls in Venezuela to try and influence this recall vote that's happening this week or next. And I think it's happening next week. And,
well, something's going on, yeah. Because there's no way Kerry is neck and neck with Bush. I mean, I just don't believe it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not seeing the evidence of it, although I have to say, you know, my parents are Republicans who support Bush. I mean, it's not just total crazy people out there. I have a lot of respect for my parents and their political sensibilities. I strongly disagree with them.
But
there are people out there who are just plain old loyal Republicans. And
the only thing that I can see is some kind of conspiracy theory that when Bush wins the election because of the rigged electronic voting machines,
yeah,
the Republicans can come back and say,
see, yeah,
well, see, it was neck and neck in the polls. How outrageous that Bush won.
Yeah, and you know, that's going to take an awful lot of different corporations, given that most of the big polls are by the big corporations. And yeah, NBC is owned by GE, which is one of the world's largest defense contractors and makers of nuclear. But it would take an awful lot. On the other hand, you've got, like, you know, somebody called in yesterday and said, you know, the Zogby polls are showing that Kerry's way out ahead. And, you know, why is their poll, which is generally very accurate, so different from everybody else's polls? That's a good question.
So, and my comment is, my dad worked for the Army Finance Center here in Indianapolis,
mm-hmm,
for 30 years as a computer programmer, and you were talking about the way the Army does health care.
Mm-hmm.
I have a very rare immune deficiency, and I've had 329 surgeries.
Ouch.
And I mean, it's perfect insurance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now in the 80s, when my dad got talked into going in to some HMOs, not 80s, well, late 80s, early 90s,
mm-hmm,
that was bad. The whole HMO thing, if you're chronically ill, the HMOs are not good.
Yeah.
I don't want it to go the HMO way.
No. And what you're describing in the military is a single payer. It works. It actually works. Sean, thanks for the call. Dueling op-eds right at the top of the page. One titled Ralph Nader, Let the Voter Beware, which I wrote. And one titled Democratic Party Should Live Up to Its Name that Ralph Nader wrote. We'll see how that shakes out. Stick around.
Tom Hartman will be speaking out in Santa Fe, New Mexico with We the People, a call to take back America, a Friday evening talk August 27th at the Santa Fe Armory for the Arts, to be followed by a Saturday, August 28th workshop called Waking Up to Personal and Global Transformation. Tom Hartman brings his wit, wisdom, and intelligence to Santa Fe the weekend of August 27th and 28th. Tom Hartman will discuss with us how America faces its greatest threat since a civil war. And Tom Hartman will look at how Western thinking, legends, and myths have caused global problems and endangered democracy and what we can do about it. To get your tickets and more information, call 505-988-2223 in Santa Fe. That's 505-988-2223 or visit greatmystery.org. Tickets for Tom Hartman are also available at Collected Works Bookstore in Santa Fe.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available at bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis: poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
I'm Sarah Turner of the Workers' Independent News Service bringing you today's feature story. A New York police officer went on trial this week for disobeying orders by refusing to arrest a homeless man who was asleep in a parking garage. WIN correspondent Rebecca Miles reports.
The police officer, Eduardo De La Cruz, a 10-year New York Police Department veteran with an unblemished record, may lose his job. The departmental trial began Wednesday for an incident that happened 2 years ago. Anthony Miranda, executive chair of the National Latino Officers Association, has been attending the trial.
They never gave Officer De La Cruz a direct order. In the police department's patrol guide is very specific wording when it's courts for disobeying an order where you are instructed as a supervisor to say, "Officer, I am now ordering you to take this arrest." And the sergeant on the stand today admitted he never used those words.
Miranda says that he thinks it's a kangaroo court and thinks De La Cruz is being targeted because he's Latino. What is of note is the trial has been conducted in the same year that the New York Police Department settled a $27 million lawsuit filed by 22 Latino and black officers who argued they were more severely punished in discipline actions than white officers. We contacted the NYPD Deputy Commissioner of Public Information for supervisor is a serious offense, and it's treated accordingly for De La Cruz could be losing his job, despite no orders being given. The civil rights activist Norman Siegel is De La Cruz's lawyer, and I asked him why he thought De La Cruz was on trial for the same incident.
There really shouldn't be a case. They've already punished him more than adequately.
Officer De La Cruz is expected to take the stand in his defense on Tuesday. For the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Rebecca Miles reporting from New York.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I ain't looking to compete with you, beat or cheat or mistreat you.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Billy in Santa Cruz is on the line. Hey, Billy, you got a good rant for us?
Yeah, yeah. First, a piece of advice. You know, my puts are up 50%.
Your puts are always, yeah. Well, see, I remember when I told you the market was going to start falling in mid-June?
Yeah, it didn't start then, did it?
Yeah, it did.
And is it for the reason you thought, by the way?
Well, by and large, yeah. I mean, you know, there's just this whole collision of debt and all, there's a half a dozen different things, you know.
Here's why I bought the puts. I think you'll get a kick out of this.
Okay.
You know, whenever Bush starts losing, we know he trumps up fear.
Yeah.
Fear makes the market go down.
Yeah.
So, and the market also wants Bush to win, so when it thinks he's not winning, it makes the market go down.
I don't think the market wants Bush to win, because anybody who has been in the market for more than 10 years knows that over the last 80 years,
over the last
80 years, you track the stock market, it always goes up during Democratic administrations and down during Republican administrations, and there has not been a single exception to that in essentially the history of the modern stock market.
That's right. Let me ask you this question about Republicans and respect and parents and things like that.
Yes, sir.
My guess is that your parents won't even let you talk about Bush.
Not true. My parents actually listen to my program every day.
Okay, so then here's my question.
And they're good Republicans.
What is it? That's my point. A good Republican at this point should be turning their back on Bush. What is their excuse for still backing Bush?
You know, I honestly don't know, because I don't get into those debates with them
make
any
the
longer.
Make the point with him that you ask this question. You say, if you caught him with raping a child, would that, you know, say, what is it? Ask them. What would turn you away from Bush? Or are you incapable of being able to relate to the truth?
Well, these are good questions to ask Republicans in general. I mean, I want to depersonalize this, because, you know, I can imagine my parents right now cringing.
For Republicans. I actually believe them to just being just... that there's no excuse anymore. All the intellectual reasons for being a Republican have gone away. He's not a conservative. He's not fiscally conservative. He's not lessening. He's not staying out of our bedrooms. He's not letting us have privacy. You name it, he ain't it.
Yeah, yeah. Except there is this huge propaganda machine out there that particularly people.
Stupid. Why would you respect someone?
No. Particularly people who watch Fox News. They just get sucked in by this stuff, and
you and I know better.
Yeah.
You and I know when we see Fox News, it's crap.
I know. Billy, thanks for the call. I'm sorry, we got to go. It's the end of the week. It's the end of the day. But I appreciate your call. Great to hear from you. Yeah. There is. Check out Common Dreams. CommonDreams.org right now. www.commondreams.org. It's great. What a juxtaposition. Anyhow, it's the Tom Hartman Program. Thanks to Louise for producing our show today, to Ira for engineering it, to Shelby for streaming us around the planet, to our sponsors for making the show possible, to Jay for our music. Thanks to the folks to our chat room for showing up, and thanks to you for listening. See you next Monday. Same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie,